B, and the last will be IDT. I don't know why. The reason is not well accepted, but I will just give them that honor of saying we'll go in that sequence. Honorable members, good morning. Our entities, good morning and welcome to Parliament. Because today we don't have much time, I think we need to start with our meeting. Can I request agreement? Are you ready, agreement?
I am ready.
Okay. Whilst waiting for them to assist Agrima, there's an apology from Honorable Rabbi Dapi. And then I don't know whether there are still other apologies. Okay. Agrima, department.
Good morning, Honorable Chairperson, and then members of Parliament and then colleagues. Chairperson, thank you very much. I actually just firstly wanted to indicate the apology of the Minister for his not being available today. And I know that the Chairperson would appreciate the Minister is busy trying to get to know the business better and getting closer to matters in the department. He would have loved. He made a commitment that he wants to attend most of the committee meetings, but he's not able to be here today. And so is the case with the acting DG of the department. This is why I'm leading the delegation from the department. My name is Busha Matuke, and the acting CEO of the department. And Chairperson, we also want to thank you profusely and the committee for agreeing that we present that way. The reason really is that we think because the other ones are smaller in size, it will assist us to save more time. I realize that the committee is under pressure to save time, to just 30 minutes per entity, but they will present definitely what they're supposed to present. And I think the reason that I just want to say, Chairperson, if you give me permission, is to also thank the committee profusely for the Chairperson and some members of the committee attending the summit of the EPLP that took place last week. And I want to report to this committee that that summit went extremely well, Chairperson. It was well attended. We had close to 800 delegates at the summit. And all that was supposed to be done was done, and we've got resolutions that I think the committee will be very proud of that we'll present to the committee in due course as a department. We also had the National Contractor Development Workshop that took place the week before, but I think here, Ronald is still the standard for the CIDB. The CEO will touch on it. And Chairperson, again, maybe to just start off, this is really a build-up from our previous meeting with the committee, which we had on the 30th of August, where we presented the first quarter report of the entities. And today we are happy that we are with them, and we're presenting the second quarter. So we'll definitely be going straight to the first quarter, to the second quarter, but of course, linking some of the issues that we need to link, Chairperson. And thank you very much, Chairperson. And I think I'll ask therefore, based on what the Chairperson said, that agreement should start. But Chairperson, could I also just seek your indulgence and just quickly mention the names of the members that are going to be presenting to the committee from each entity? Okay, Chairperson, thank you.
They will introduce themselves. Are you ready? I come not yet. Let me respond to the department. Department, on behalf of the portfolio committee, would also like to thank the department for accepting or noting suggestions made by the portfolio committee on the EPWP. The issue of the model, that you took it seriously, that you need to look into the issue of the model. The issue of the daily rate, that you are looking into it. The issue of the MOU signed by the premiers instead of going down, because implementation is done down there. And the issue of the food for waste package, that you are looking into it. And we hope that we will take our recommendations seriously. And on that note, thank you very much. Agrima. Ale Loki. Okay.
Morning, Chair. Morning, Honorable Members. The technician is still busy with the presentation, but you have the hard copy. And with your permission, Honorable Chair, I can proceed using the hand hard copy. Accompanying me today is Senior Technical Assessor, Vanessa Adell, and greetings from our Honorable Chair, Mr. Peter Silinga, who could not be here today. So our presentation is our second quarter performance of the 2011-2012 financial year. As the Chief Operations Officer mentioned, the first quarter report was presented to the Parliamentary Portfolio Committee, and I will therefore focus on the second quarter report. And the areas that I'll cover is the performance plan, progress against planned activities, briefly cover governance issues, human resources report, and the financial report. Therefore, I will just go straight on to the actual progress achieved against planned activities. And in line with our mandate, we look at technical assessment of innovative construction products and materials. And in the last quarter, we had the first slide indicates progress received to the end of the 2010-2011 year for comparison purposes, and the numbers there are as was reported in the previous Parliamentary Portfolio Committee meeting on the 20th of October last month. And the next slide gives the progress to September, and on applications received, evaluation offers made, accepted, and certificates issued, all the numbers are 8. That was the target, but the actual you see is far higher in most of the cases in terms of applications received. We had a total of 16 applications that we did receive. And in terms of offers made, we also had 16 valuation offers which were made, and offers accepted were 8, and certificates issued were 10. All these are in excess of the targets that were targeted. And as such, the total number of certificates under our custodianship also were above targets, as well as two board meetings that were held during that period of time. In terms of governance, as I mentioned, the annual report for 2010-2011 was tabled before this portfolio committee on the 20th of October, about 2 weeks ago, or three. And we're still part and parcel of the CSR, and though we report to the Department of Public Works, and this was a question that was clarified at the last meeting by the departmental representative who was present at the meeting. And as well as at that particular meeting, the departmental representative gave clarity on the progress regarding AGRIMA achieving its legal mandate. The progress that the department has achieved in trying to get AGRIMA to get its act in place so that it can... Sorry about that. The department... Sorry about that. The departmental representative present at that particular meeting did give clarity regarding the status of the AGRIMA bill, which is being developed by the department and where it has reached. And issues regarding financial were mentioned at that particular stage. Once there is the bill, then obviously the new mandate will be commensurately funded, or there will be funding linked to what the activities are. Our transformation in terms of human resources on the next page. AGRIMA South Africa continues its strong emphasis on the development of human resources to enhance its skills level and efficiency of the technical staff. The activities within AGRIMA have remained more or less similar as it has been in the past, with a strong emphasis on ensuring that the quality and the quantity of output remains exactly the same. The technical committee of AGRIMA has improved hugely, both in terms of number and scale of experts. As you are well aware, the technical agency within AGRIMA is a very small number and rely a lot on industry expert for the various aspects of products which you have said. You will appreciate that we cannot have all the necessary skills in-house, and we have to rely on industry experts for the various fields or for the various tests, which are quite varied and quite broad, and therefore we rely greatly on industry experts to assist us in that particular regard. In terms of transformation within the agency, this has largely been addressed, and the numbers are indicated there. And the percentage of staff members who are either black or female is currently standing at 92, which is quite a high percentage. On financial reporting, I'll just go through the September 2011 financial statements, and I've got the general points in the at the front there, which indicates that the agency operates under ministerial delegation of authority from the Minister of Public Works. As you're aware, the agency was started 43 years ago and has been with the CSR, but reporting to the Department of Public Works since then, for the last 42 years. The grant funding for the agency is channeled from the department to the CSR because the legal entity is the CSR, so we are an agency of the Department of Public Works. The funds are ring-fenced within the CSR Built Environment Unit and in a separate competence area. Therefore, they can only be used for AGRIMA and nothing else but AGRIMA. The agency's transactions are subjected to the policies, procedures, and government procedures of the CSR, and our agency funds are audited as part and parcel of the CSR Built Environment Unit. And as was reported at the last meeting, the CSR has received an unqualified audit report from the Office of the Auditor General for the last few years and has been hailed by government as an example of good financial management, which means that the funds that AGRIMA has are well managed. Honorable Chair, ladies and gentlemen, on the next slide, I do have the statement for income and expenditure in respect for the period 1st April to September 2011. And for comparison purposes, I've indicated the comparison figures between 2010, last financial year, and this financial year, 2011-2012. And on total income, there's an increase in total income of about 500,000. The grant received, there's also been a small increase, and income from external clients has also been a small increase. In total, the increase, as I mentioned, is about 500,000, and expenditure is also listed there, which has also increased by about 500,000 between the 2 years. And it's broken down between the various aspects of expenditure, operational costs, accounting for about 3.7 compared to 3.4 the previous year, manpower running costs, 2.5 compared to 2.4, running costs of about 1.1 compared to 1 million, and then all the other costs are equally split there. This expenditure to date to September is about 51% of the annual expenditure for the financial year, and therefore is in line with expectations. On the overhead costs, the to date is about 1 million as compared to about 800 million last financial year. There's an increase of about 300,000. Depreciation has stayed more or less the same between 176 to 190. And the shared services cost has been a slight increase while the executive level has come down slightly, giving a total expenditure of 4.7 compared to 4.2, giving a difference of about 500,000. And that expenditures are also listed there. In terms of remuneration, as was reported previously, the numbers are there for the management and specialists, and the space between minimum, midpoint, and the maximum remuneration. And in the next slide, I do have more detail on the on the costing for information, which gives a breakdown of the various costs which have been incurred to September, comparing 2010 and 2011, as well as 2011-2012. There's a mistake in the typo there, 2012 on the last one. Therefore, Honorable Chair, in conclusion, I now have taken less than the allocated time. AGRIMA contributes towards national presidential imperatives and global sustainability by undertaking technical assessments of innovative construction products. I gave a lot of typical examples in my last presentation where I mentioned three different groups of products which have been used extensively in sustainability and issues related to job creation. And then secondly, AGRIMA is committed to service delivery and accountability in accordance with its mandate relating to technical assessments. I'd just like to reiterate two or three of the products which I mentioned previously. One is the thin concrete road surfacing system which has been piloted in the Pretoria area by the CSR, an AGRIMA certificated innovative road construction surfacing system. It has been used successfully in Atteridgeville, Shoshanguve, as well as Mamelodi in Pretoria, and has been proven that this thin concrete can be used effectively to surface existing roads. The pilot scheme was a labor-intensive one. In other words, they used labor-intensive machinery to put the thin concrete and was very, very successful. The pilot scheme will be rolled out in other areas within the country. I'd also like to highlight the product, the soil cement construction system that was created by the former deputy minister in Limpopo province. This particular product, Hydroform, uses 7%.
Can you please close the door? I'm sorry.
Thanks. This particular Hydroform product uses 7% cement and 92 or 93% of soil, mixed with a little bit of water, and makes bricks in situ. In other words, the bricks are made using the local soil. This particular product in Northern Province was built by the local Limpopo province was built by the local women. They were given in-situ training, in other words, local training on site, and within a period of a weekend, together with the deputy minister, they built their own house. The idea is to replicate this particular project in all the provinces of the country. I hope this particular project does go ahead, despite the deputy minister moving on to other responsibilities. The third product I just wanted to highlight to bring to your attention was the thin layer asphalt, which I made an example of previously. And I stated that this particular thin asphalt has been used successfully in a lot of the highways within Johannesburg, Pretoria, as well as on a lot of the airports. It's a thinner asphalt but very strongly reinforced. And it's thinner but performs better. It carries a bigger load. It's cheaper to construct because it uses less asphalt than the thicker surfaces that were used previously and has been very successful. Now, ladies and gentlemen, these three examples illustrate that modern, innovative, efficient forms of construction can be used to meet national imperatives of job creation, doing more with less, getting cheaper products to the market, creating employment, skills development, and a lot of other environmental sustainability because they use less material, less harmful to the environment. And therefore, this illustrates the impact of the innovative products assessed by an independent technical assessment agency like AGRIMA. On the third bullet, ladies and gentlemen, in the conclusion, I say that AGRIMA is an authoritative technical assessment system or system performance which leads to local economic stimulus self-creating jobs, as I illustrated in the Limpopo province project. And it contributes towards fast-tracking rural economic development by allowing the safe introduction of appropriate and suitable products. AGRIMA as well facilitates the safe introduction of improved construction products. It facilitates global acceptance of products, of South African-produced products, and provide independent, authoritative, technical assurance of fitness of persons. Thank you, Honorable Chair, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you, AGRIMA, for your presentation. Can we move to CBE?
Thank Thank you, Honorable Chair, and the members of the Portfolio Committee, Public Works. Thank you, and the colleagues of the entities of the Public Works. Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you.
I'm with on my left was my CEO, Dr. Bhuti Ramphele-Ramgalipata, our COO, Sezeko Gwazube, and our strategist in the CEO office, Lucas Rebe. I think it's somewhere around. Thank you, honorable members, and thank you for the opportunity for us to present our quarter one, quarter two as part of our performance for our business plan for 2011-2012. And you will see, honorable members, that in our presentation we had a slow traction for quarter one, but we can currently present on our presentation that quarter two has picked up very well, to an extent that certain projects have actually are ahead of the set targets. But you will also see that, members, that there's a lot of progress that has been made in terms of policy development in line with our mandate role to ensure that standard policies across the professional council are achieved. But once again, also, honorable members, one of the areas of focus for us is really creating this synergistical working relationship with professional councils in order for us to drive the government priorities. And this is an area of focus for us that we need to drive continuously and aggressively. And if I may, Honorable Chair, that hand over to our CEO and COO to present the details of our quarterly report for quarter one and quarter two. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members of the Committee and my colleagues. We are pleased to present to you the results for quarter two from the CBE. I was just looking at who's driving the presentation, Lucas. If you could just go back to the first slide. In terms of our plan, our work has been grouped into four programs. The first program is the administration program, and the aim of this program is strategic management and administrative support for CBE. This program encompasses internal CBE processes, internal risk management processes, and internal quality management processes. The second program is the Built Environment Skills Academy. The Skills Academy's objective is to improve the skills in the built environment space and ultimately lead to transformation of this sector from a skills point of view. The third program is the Center for Innovation and Integrated Planning. The objective of this program is to facilitate integrated planning within the professional councils, and it seeks to reorientate professional expertise towards the challenges of the day and the support of the developmental state. The last program, which is the fourth program, is our public interest program, and this derives largely from our mandate. It deals with matters such as the identification of work, the registration, regulations, and the appeals processes that take place in the council. Our report has been distributed, and our presentation today will cover those points that you see. We will look at the highlights of the year to date, the challenges that we have experienced, our perception of the change in the risk view, a brief overview of the Professional Council's report, and the demographic profiles of the BE built environment professionals. Now, our highlights for the quarter, we have completed identification of work draft regulations for three councils. The target for the year is to complete four identification of work draft regulations, so we are on track to achieve that target. We have submitted two identification of work exemption applications to the Competition Commission. The target for the year is four. We have submitted the policy papers on CPD, SDB, and recognition of new professions to the Minister for consideration and approval.
Of course, our business planning session has been successfully concluded, and our business plan was submitted to the Department of Works. In terms of our expenditure to date, our overall spending is 10% above what we had budgeted for, and when I come to the summary slide on cost, you will see where those adverse variances have occurred. Opportunities. We still believe that there are opportunities to significantly improve our work. Our focus is on reduction of turnaround times in our internal processes and enhancement of our stakeholder management with external stakeholders, the professional council, the ministry, and other interested parties. But in terms of the program summary, these are the details of the program performances as we have them. In program one, as I've said, program one encompasses strategic planning, business performance, that is reporting, risk management, and internal project management processes. We are glad to report that to date, our risk management processes have been well developed. We have circulated a governance framework for review. We have completed our operational risk assessment process. We have appointed risk coordinators in our different business areas. So that side of our business, we are happy with the progress. On the business performing side, we have submitted this report in terms of the guidelines. We have completed our business plan in terms of the guidelines. So we are happy with the business planning process. The area where we see improvement is in the project management space. We are looking internally, and I hope at the end of the next quarter we'll be able to come and announce the progress that we have made. Our quality management system as well needs attention, and we are starting work on that, and we hope that we will be able to report in the coming quarters on the progress that we have made. On the skills academy side, monitoring visits to the students were conducted as planned. There is a position paper on CPD and the SGB that has been submitted, as I've already said. On the Center of Innovation and Excellence, the establishment of databases is progressing well. We are monitoring the usage of the databases, and on all accounts, our usage, actual usage, exceeds our budgeted usage for the quarter. However, on the establishment of the communities of practice, we have hit a snag. Our IT infrastructure at this point in time cannot support proper functioning of these communities of practice. So this project has been referred back for re-scoping and re-examination to see what we need to do with our IT infrastructure to be able to bring about these communities of practice. We don't want to establish these communities of practice if they're not going to work properly, because people might just lose interest in the long term. On the public interest side, we are ahead of our target as far as the identification of where draft regulations are concerned. We are happy with the progress. The only area where we have concern, as I will highlight later on, is in the appeals process. Now, the following four or five slides basically try to answer the question, have we done the work that we planned to do, and have we spent the money as we planned to spend the money? So on each of the graphs you will see for the next four slides or five slides, you will see a graph on the left-hand side. That is the actual work, that green bar is the actual work that we have done in the different projects under that program, and the blue bar is the planned work that we were supposed to have done quarter to date. As you can see, on the administration project, we are behind. We have started 8 out of the 11 projects we intended to have done, and the costs on the right-hand side reflect that they are tracking the work that was done. the outstanding work, as I was said, is the internal work in terms of process mapping, project management, and quality management system. If you go on to the Built Environment Skills Academy, you will see that the actual performance to date is way behind what we had planned. There's no need for red light yet. The work, particularly around the battery scheme, happens in chunks. So the next chunk of work is taking place now, and the next chunk of money is going to flow now when we do the payment. The report on the accreditation of programs is on track, and we hope to complete that in quarter three. We go to the next slide. On the Center for Innovation and Integrated Planning, again, we have fallen behind our progress from what we had planned, but the nature of this project are such that most of the finances, the costs will flow in the third quarter of the project. I've talked about the project around the communities of practice that has now been suspended because of the IT problem. So this program will restart as soon as we have sorted out the technical difficulties. We have a stakeholder management plan that is developed. It still needs to be tabled to management and to council, and that will also come on stream. The other work that is on hold in this area is around the hosting of the BE Indaba. You might recall that the intention was to host this Indaba every year, and then we had made a suggestion that we need to hold it once every 2 years. We're just waiting for confirmation from the minister, and as soon as we get that confirmation, we will go ahead with the preparation. On the public interest side, for the quarter, we had intended to start four projects. We have started four projects. Our draft regulation, registration regulations, are taking shape, and they should be ready to be tabled in council in quarter three. Overall, we are happy with the state of our project. The biggest work that is outstanding is in the areas, as I've said, under Program 1, in the areas of quality management, internal process mapping, and internal project management. That is our cost summary slide. You will see that more than 75% of our costs are actually fixed, is the top two lines of that table. So, you know, they are not, strictly speaking, variable. The biggest chunk of our program costs are sitting at the second bottom line, and there we still 52% behind. And that's what I kept on saying when I was taking you through the program. Most of these programs, by their nature, payments are done towards the end when the programs are completed. So we still believe we are on track to be on target full year, come full year. Challenges going forward, we need to confirm the situation around the hosting of the Indaba. We need to work on our project execution to improve our project execution, and then we need to finalize appeals that are referred to us within 60 days. The Act requires us to resolve these appeals in 60 days. At the moment, our appeals are taking more than 60 days, and we need to bring back to compliance. That would require that we will have to work with the professional councils to streamline our processes to make sure that when there's a need to exchange documents, that happens seamlessly. We have communicated with the professional councils, and we will be engaging them to try and bring this on target. Finalization of the memorandums of agreement. Four out of the six councils well, two have signed, two have indicated willingness to sign, two are still not decided yet. We have talked to the registrars of this council. They have tabled this matter with their council, and the delay is taking place in their council. In the meeting of registrars yesterday, we undertook myself and the chief operating officer to engage them face to face if necessary to try and get resolution to this matter as soon as possible. Going forward, our perception of the risk, our key strategic risk, of course, is still our inability to execute our mandate, and the key risk driver in this respect is stakeholder engagement. Unless the CBE develops proper alignment between itself and the professional council, there's not much we're going to achieve. And we realize this, and we are working on our stakeholder engagement plan, and we hope to improve, to report improvement. The second area, of course, is what I've just highlighted, is non-compliance with legislation with regard to the appeals process. It's something which we have identified. The performance target is clear. We have to resolve the appeals within 60 days, and we're working towards that. The third, of course, is unforeseen expenditure, special projects that the council do, and all the work that is done which has not been planned. We just need to keep control over that. We believe that the risk associated with the strategic planning process has been largely been mitigated. We have the plan, we have it in terms of the guidelines. What is left now is just for us to implement it. As far as our professional councils are concerned, we've dealt with the matter of the appeals process. We are going to work with them to bring this about. The main issue, of course, with the professional councils remains the issue of transformation. Towards the end of my presentation, I'll show you the demographics of the membership of the professional council. The implementation of CPD is progressing well across all the six professions, and we have over 65% of the registered professionals complying with the CPD. Now, on transformation and the professional council, the council submits lots of data, but the essence of the data is summarized in this slide. The essence of the data is that our current membership of the professional councils in terms of race is still 66% white, 20% African, and that is just not in line with the demographics of the country. In terms of gender, if you go to the next slide, okay, now this is the candidate. That is just to show, if you look at the candidates, we have 59% of the candidates being black and 40% being white. So there is change if you look at who is coming into the profession. What we need to establish is how many of these candidates successfully get registered within the prescribed time. Because it's a good thing to have this kind of demographics for the candidates, but if they are all not getting into the registered ranks, it's also not showing progress. And we have engaged the councils on this, who will be looking at the statistics in a slightly different format. The gender is the same story, 88% male, 12% female. And if you look at the candidates, you have 22% females and 70% males. It's just out of line with what is happening. Of course, each of these councils has got its own challenges, they've got their own circumstances, but the overall objective that is to be achieved is quite clear, and this graph shows the gap that we have to close. In conclusion, Madam Chair, overall we are working as we planned to work. Overall, we are spending the money as we had planned. There is an improvement in quarter two compared to quarter one, And our forecast looking forward is that we should be able to achieve most of our plan objectives that we have presented to you previously. Thank you.
Thank you, CBE. CIDB, can you please get ready? CIDP, you will present up to 10:30. We are on track, we are on time. So we'll be able to engage.
Thank you, Madam Chair, honorable members, colleagues. First of all, I'd like to send our chairperson, Mr. Bafana Ndeza, sends his apologies due to a prior engagement and he couldn't make it to this meeting today. I'd also like to announce it from the onset that I think we have sent a response to the committee after our engagement in early October. On the 25th of October, we sent a written response to our all the engagements and the questions that were raised when we visited the committee. Also, that in that response that we are sending, we also attached the NCDP report. I'll talk about that in our presentation. That was also included there, which was launched on the 26th and 27th of October. I'm not alone today. I'm accompanied by four of my colleagues, Mr. Ibrahim Mula, Mr. Gerard Naidu, Inba Sambiren, and Johannes Makubele, who is our monitoring and evaluation manager. Once more, thanks for the opportunity to present the second quarter report of the CIDB. The format of the report, we're going to highlight, you know, specific areas that we call topical areas, you know, that we feel members would have an interest on. The other matters are just mostly operational that we included in our report, and we will not be highlighting those. and we leave more time to questions and engagement after the presentation. The layout, we'll be going through the statutory mandate, requirement for performance information reporting as the National Treasury Regulations, scope and approach, performance summary and key performance achievements and non-achievements, and areas of improvement, financial report, and we'll conclude. The core program activities of CIDB are founded in a legislative mandate that the executive authority is directly responsible for overseeing. And the requirements of National Treasury Regulations is that institutions should adopt a quarterly reporting system, including a submission of agreed information to executive authorities, presidency, and relevant treasury and PPP. And the performance information framework requires monitoring and reporting of performance against expenditure plans and targets, which will enable managers to manage by giving them information they need to take decisions to keep service delivery on track. In order to comply with the National Treasury Regulations and Performance Information Framework requirements, the CIDB, the Performance Progress Report, was compiled and submitted to the Executive Authority. Progress Report covers performance of core programs accumulating from quarter one to quarter two. And the new format in line with the new framework was adopted in compiling the second quarter progress report. And the targets were placed into quarterly milestones to indicate what will be done per quarter to achieve strategic objectives. And these are some of the terms we used: achieved, WIPs for work in progress and non-achievement, and the reasons for deviation and corrective action plans. Key performance summaries, achievements and non-achievements, the program are as follows. There are four core programs at the CIDB, and one of them is the growth and contractor development, which is expected, and its expected mandate outcomes are sustainable growth of the construction industry and development of contractors. Number of performance targets in this area to date, 10, and we've achieved 7 of those. And those that are work in progress, and work in progress in this case is targets that we will be completing or concluding in the quarters that follow, quarter 3 and 4. So these are work in progress. There's 3 of them, and none of the targets have not been achieved in this area. And in terms of the achievement, the National Contractor Development Framework, which has been updated and approved by the steering committee, endorsed by the CIDB Board on the 28th of September, and now has actually subsequently been launched between the CIDB and a workshop held between the CIDB and the National Department of Public Works. The launch will follow at a later stage, I think as soon as the minister has actually settled down. And we've attended all the scheduled DPW and CDP steering committees that gave birth to this launch, or rather the workshops that took place. And one contractor development forum has been held per province in the second quarter. So Gerard Naidu, who's looking after the area, has actually been doing a lot of visitations to provinces, engagement with stakeholders, and also following from our engagement with the program committee in the last minute meeting that we had about the visit to the Eastern Cape, that has been followed up, and then Mr. Munaidu has already gone there, and we are still going through. Meetings will be arranged after the 23rd of November with the chairperson specifically to attend, and our deputy chairperson of the board. The next program, core program at the CIDB, is construction industry performance. Its outcome, sustainable growth of the construction industry and development of contractors, and the number of performance targets are 11 to date, scheduled, and targets achieved are 5, and the work in progress is 6, because it's mostly research-based, so the progress actually will take time. And these are earmarked for conclusion in the third and fourth quarter. The achievement is the construction indicators. We've done communication sessions with industry stakeholders,
stakeholders on state of the industry, covering areas of customer satisfaction, quality, payment delays, business conditions, and state of transformation. And these are the dates on which some of these meetings and engagements took place, 22nd August, 29th August, and the 30th of September. The third program is Procurement and Delivery Management, which promotes enhanced public sector construction, procurement, and infrastructure delivery. 15 targets in this area, 16 achieved, work in progress of 7, and 2 not achieved, and we'll indicate how we're planning to make up for these 2 that we have not achieved. In terms of the achievement, the key issues to report on is the rollout and implementation of the IDP toolkit in all provinces has been done, and case law reports published in the September 2011 period. Compliance report was gazetted and published in July 2011. These are compliance reports for any contractors that have actually been found to have not complied with the CIDB's regulations. These have to be published as per the our regulations. And on the opposite side now, the client is the second bullet there, investigations into non-compliance to CIDB strictness by public sector clients. This we also shared with the committee in the last meeting, which involved the audit list that we undertook to gauge, you know, the level of compliance out there, you know, on CIDB's regulations. And I think out of 100 clients, you know, just to give you an idea here, out of 100 clients, 97 did not actually comply with the CIDB regulations one way or another. It's in December, and we'll share with us further on this on the outcome of this investigation during question and answer time. And the non-achievement, which is the development of a draft framework and action plan for the municipal toolkit by March 2012. We are still awaiting National Treasury's instruction to develop the framework. I think this is where this target we might not even be able to achieve because of the problem within the National Treasury itself, because we're supposed to work together in terms of the development. National Treasury is one of the partnerships or partners in this toolkit development. And we are not, it's really moving very slow, you know, and we reckon we might even miss the target, because by now we should have actually carried out a whole lot of work, which we haven't done. To review the strategy, should audit, evaluate, and report on compliance to CIDB regulations by May. There was an error in terms of the date of completion here, and we are correcting that in the next strat plan and APP that we will be submitting to the executive authority, because in any case we are doing a revision, as we reported previously as well, a revision of the structure to be SMART compliant in terms of the National Treasury framework. The next program, fourth core program is construction registration services, which is where your contractors are being registered. Target 9, 2 achieved. 4 work in progress, and 3 not achieved. And the achievement relates to query resolution, which target we've given ourselves about 48 hours to turn around time that we are achieving. Fraud and awareness workshops have been held. These are done annually, which is a big issue with the CIDB, you know, the issue of fraud. I think we also reported in our annual reporting that there have been employees who have either been suspended or fired, whose cases are still also continuing. Others are sitting at the CCMA at the stage. So the fraud awareness workshop is an annual event that we do specifically for this area and also for the CIDB-wide employees. In terms of the targets that we could not achieve, and I think this is a very key target, the registration of grades
within 21 days. We are working very, very, very hard to really get out of this one. And by the 11th of November, it's the date earmarked that we should be up to date in terms of the target, ensuring that within 21 days we are able to process applications, all compliant applications. This is one area, obviously, in terms of reputational damage, you know, could cause a lot of problems for the CIDD. Client compliance reports produced quarterly, and this relates to the iTender or Register of Projects. Not enough attention was given to this register previously at the CIDD, but we are moving very fast to ensure that it is up to date. It's related to the audit list that procurement and delivery management are actually managing to check the level of compliance. We are actually in the process of developing a proper system, a full system, and also capacitating the area for the area to be very fully functional. The guidelines by 31 of July 2011, we've finished the design part on the 29th of July, and this also we've actually accelerated in terms of completion. Areas of improvement just overall, which is in line with what the AG has actually indicated to us. We need to have a proper tool actually to monitor and evaluate and be able to come to the committee and engage with the committee as it is now. We are actually coming up with a system to deal with this area. The task team has been established to assist with management reviews. And also, as I mentioned now today, we with our monitoring and evaluation manager who's within the risk and governance area, we are capacitating the area to ensure that the delivery does take place and we can intervene timely if we fall behind. And our audit will assist in the process, is assisting in the process as well. We do also have for training of staff. We've got experts that are actually training us to ensure that they are fully compliant when it comes to the framework. Financial performance overall, starting with the revenue for the quarter to date or year to date, September. On the revenue side, we are doing quite well. Still collecting more than what we budgeted for in terms of the from the register side. As you can see, about 3.1 million. So we've over recovered by about 15% in this area. I think even so that when you come again, you know, at the year end after the annual report has been presented, this is one area where we're going to be asking for rollovers because we over-collected and we then plan forward in terms of what we would have over-collected. And when we motivate the National Treasury to say we're rolling over for these reasons and this is the type of plans we're going to we have for this kind of, for these funds. On the expenditure side, just the bottom part of standard item expenditure, we are actual versus budget, about 47 million actual against 50 million of budget. So we are under budget by about 3.2 million. Overall, in relation to the annual budget of 100 million, we are sitting at 43%. So we are about 7% off the mark, you know, which we're confident we'll be able to make up in the next two quarters. In conclusion, the accounting authority, our board has committed itself to providing effective oversight role in tracking and monitoring the action plans to ensure that CIDB achieves its objectives by maintaining effective and efficient performance information. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair Dobbin. We'll now move to IGT. Honorable Chair and the members.
Are you ready?
Yes.
I thought that if you will move and give IDP time.
I will speak and then in the process you will be very quick.
Okay.
We're conscious of the time constraints and allowing enough
time. KDB,
yesterday I traveled with you from Johannesburg up to Cape Town. There was tension between me and you. What was it? we were next to we were sitting in the lady and the gentleman were next to me, but there was no just two gentlemen and ladies. There was no, you know, greeting and jokes and all that. You know, when we're out there, man, there should be time for business and time for jokes and all that. I did not see you.
Thank you, Chair. To you, Chair, and the Honorable Chair and the Honorable Member, we always appreciate the opportunity given to us. And this morning, we've given that opportunity to present our second quarter report within this financial year. I'm here, Chair, with a colleague of mine next to me, Trustee Mazada. And we go to have Vani here doing the presentation on behalf of the ITC. The CEO is present also. And behind Vani, we have our CFO. And without taking most of your time and the others.
Thank you, Chairperson. Honorable members and Chair of the Committee, we have two sets of documents. One is a 50-page web document. A lot of detail often gets lost in a presentation. And that's really the main document. The presentation is a summary of the document. As a way of reminder, Chairperson, we set ourselves two strategic goals. One was related to sustainable development, and the other was being more effective and efficient for the organization. We've broken that down into specific strategic objective areas, that is the empowerment of communities, which we have given the weighting and the budget, the integrated social infrastructure. We've also provided the weighting as well as...
You're not audible enough. I don't know.
Oh,
yeah, get mic closer to you. Yeah.
So it means most of our work, if we looked at weighting, would be on integrated social infrastructure. We also looked at an effective and efficient and compliant IDT, which we weighted at 20%. Chairperson, you'll recall that the IDT is in a transformation phase. And in fact, the allocation from the National Treasury focuses on the transformation. Therefore, our fourth strategic objective era was around transforming the IDT. If we were to look at one objective at a time, one on the empowered communities, we had set ourselves the objectives of baseline governance structures and projects. I wish Chairperson to highlight where we're not doing quite well so that you can then see what corrective actions we are proposing. In the area of identifying community projects, we have not been doing quite well. There is a time lag delay within that, as you would know, Honorable Members. You can't enter into a community and then just start the project. You must engage with the community and then start the project with the community. So the timelines around that type it are different. As well as the innovative models for documentation, where we're not doing very well. Because we're not doing well on community projects, we are also not doing well on indicators related to that. And that, as you can see, is in the red. The main one that I also wish to highlight is the cash resource mobilization. It was our intention to call on corporate South Africa to bring in a particular contribution towards development.
Can you please take members on board? They are not on board.
Oh, okay.
This one.
Yes. It's supposed to be in color. I think it's much better. So we're looking at empowered communities, and I was saying that one of our greatest challenges was the indicators related to mobilizing corporate social responsibility budgets. As you know, the recession has come out with less investment on the part of corporates, and so that target is not doing quite well, as is with the target on partnerships, because those two are in fact interrelated. The number of partnerships would give you the resources. We have not presented this to the board, but these are proposals to the board, which I think
you might want to look at, and also the committee, of proposing a revision of the resource mobilization target from 110 to 88 million, which is a reduction by 20%. We believe that that would be more realistic as a target. We'd also like to revise the local area planning figure, which is one of the indicators there, to the baseline figure, which is 9. In other words, what we managed to do last year was 9 at LAP baseline. We're proposing that we maintain that in this particular year. Members, this is also linked to the level of engagement you can have at a community level and with a quick turnaround time. We will accelerate our community projects, so our allocations going forward will skew more towards the community projects than the other objectives that we've set ourselves. We will, in the context of the transformation, also link the work that we're doing in the hub that we've proposed to innovative models. So the target that sits at 2 innovative models we will maintain, because we will use the hub as part of that mechanism to get those. On the integrated infrastructure, we had a baseline of 2 billion. Last year we managed to spend about 2 billion. So far, I must say that we've spent about 2.5 billion at media, which is an enormous growth in terms of our own portfolio. We have also managed to leverage some resources from the IDT budget to community projects. Our target was 32 million. You will see that it's in red at 1.1 million. I have alluded to this in the previous indicator. So if we focus on our community projects, we'll be able to drive the spend. So we're not asking for a revision of that, but we're simply highlighting that we are slightly challenged on that particular area. You will see on the issues of empowerment, we're doing quite well. The value of BE spend is 1.1 billion. If I had to translate it differently, 3 years ago, our portfolio was about this size. It means what we spent totally last year at the IDT, 2 years ago at the IDT, we are spending totally now on Black economic empowerment. So there's an enormous improvement that's sitting there. Our target, incidentally, that's our annual target, was 1.4 billion, and we're sitting at 1.1 billion of BE. So we're doing quite well there. As is the case with our main contractor spend, at mid-year, we're sitting at 417 million. Last year, the whole year, we spent 400 million on women empowerment. So we're doing quite well at mid-year. Our projections are looking quite good there. On the community facilities erected, we're slightly challenged because the number of community facilities we can erect are dependent on the number of contracts we can raise in the public sector. So if the contracts, so they are function of those contracts. If those contracts are less, it means we can only build less structures. So we are slightly challenged there, but we do have proposals on how we can address that. If you look at our job creation figures, we're doing quite well both on EPWP and the jobs that we create ourselves in the IDT. We had been tasked in this particular aspect by the committee to present to them what is our job creation model in order to facilitate for greater learning. I must say, members, that is a work in progress. It's not at a stage that I would be comfortable to present, but I'm sure within the next month we will have a final product that we can look at. On the integrated social infrastructure, proposing that we find new ways of diversifying our portfolio, because we've traditionally pursued the health and education portfolio. And so in expanding the portfolio, we should be able to drive some of the empowerment indicators there. We've also revised, given our proposal to revise the empowerment budget, we will meet the 32 million spend on community. We're also looking at an increased demand, particularly from the Department of Education, Human Settlement, Social Development, Arts and Culture. They're coming with various projects. For instance, the Department of Arts and Culture wants us to help them with their museum. That will help us then to do those expenditures. In terms of an efficient and effective organization, as you can see, most of them are in green, which means we're quite fully compliant. In terms of budget variance, we're maintaining a 2% budget variance as opposed to 5%, so which is quite phenomenal. The management fees that we're recovering are 100% of the contract value. Why we're putting this in red is because when you look at our long-term funding strategy, management fees are critical. So it's not necessarily providing in every contract, but providing enough. So for an example, in the infrastructure sector currently, were able to raise between 3% and 5% in management fees. But most public sector organizations want us to maintain a 3%. In the social development sector, we're able to maintain between 5% and 8% in management fees. Over the long run, we intend to play off those two, such that at least 10% of our revenue comes, at least at a 10% value, our revenues would come back. That would make the organization in the long run more sustainable. So, Chairperson, it's in red not because we're not doing well, but it's in red because it's something that we want to keep an eye on as we go forward in terms of the amounts we can raise. As part of our sound governance, we have a slide that also looks at this. We managed to report on time and report on time, and we've kept a very close eye on our salary budget. So it's sitting at about 3% of total, which is something that we need to be looking at. I've said that we are focusing on the management fees. We will, in this last two quarters, and we've already started doing this, focus on our staff development. Because we believe in a transformation, we need to equip our staff to be able to be ready for the new IDT. Our target for staff development was 1.5%. We've actually set aside now 3%, which is then looking at improving the staff development figure. When we look at the transformed IDT, you will note that most of our plans around the transformation plan, the strategy, and the OD, stakeholder management, most of them are sitting between orange and red. And for us, it caused a great concern to the extent that we've taken almost half of the executive committee to focus on the transformation project, so that then we can make that quick, we can turn that picture around. I must say, Chairperson, we have successfully turned some of those other media, but when we look at this quarter's report, you will see greater improvements within the transformation process. The financial trend, it's not so visible, but if you look at our media, we're sitting at about 1.8 billion in terms of what we've spent. I need to put this into context. This is about 500 million to what we spent totally 2 years ago. And then it's about 517 million more than what we spent at media last year. So that's the phenomenal growth that we're experiencing in the IDT. It's cause for celebration, because if you look at our beginning figure, sitting at about 345 million. It says we are planning better. It says we are able to start on the 1st of April and push expenditure. Unlike in previous years, where we would start on the 1st of April, then plan for the year, and then expenditure shoots up. So there's a cost to celebrate in terms of our planning cycle as our cost. If you look at the spend in terms of program type, the majority of our spend, 62%, maintains on school building or education. The second highest will be on justice facilities, and the third highest will be on healthcare facilities. There's a later slide where we've tried to relate government priorities to this spend so that honorable members can see that we are trying to at least align ourselves to what government's expectations are. Spend per province, we've broken it down in this manner and fashion. The greatest concern that members might have is in relation to the Northern Cape. If you look at last year's expenditure in the Northern Cape, it's actually gone about 8 to 9 times what it was last year. Unfortunately, we have not been able to bring about the adequate human resources to drive expenditure in the Northern Cape. Because we're in a transformation era, we've taken a decision that we need to be freezing the post until we understand what the new IDT is, such that then we can recruit against the new IDT. And that's the worrisome thing. What have we done with that? We've managed to get the RGM based in the Northwest to give focused attention to the Northern Cape to drive expenditure within the particular province. The analysis, if you look at, and we've clustered really what were government priorities, you will see that the greatest part of our resources, 1.2 billion, we're spending on education, human resources, and skills development. This, honorable members, as you would know, is priority number one of government. And if you look at how we've aligned ourselves, that also is priority number one in the IDT. You will also note that in the areas of fighting crime and corruption, as well as health, we are spending most of our attention. So if you looked at, on the left, the government priorities, and on the right, how we've spent between our social development and infrastructure, you will see that there's an equal spread in terms of priorities. 1.8 billion of our infrastructure is going towards servicing the government priorities, and 121 on social development is going towards that as well. if we analyze the indicators around the expenditure, our target is 2.4 for this year. We've spent 1.8, as I said. 1.1 of that expenditure is on BEE. We had set ourselves the objectives of 648. On women, 417 million is on women. We've set ourselves the objective of 270. Totally, what it really means on a youth spend as well, you can see we're also making sufficient progress. Totally, what this translates to is that at least, and there is a bit of double counting because you could be a black woman or young, so there's a bit of double counting. But the total spend, if you look at it, is about 2.7 billion on empowerment. And so if you had to ask the question, what would South Africa lose if the IDT were not there? It's expenditure of 2.7 billion that's empowering the most vulnerable and marginalized. If you look at the empowerment indicators themselves, women contractors, we're targeted to develop 29 of those contractors. That is throughout the year. We've already developed 194. In other words, they've gone up the CIBB grading system, 194 women contractors. We've developed 194, but 53 of them have gone up the CIBB grading. Our target was to move 13 of them up the CIBB grading. The IDT jobs created, our target for the year is 16,000 jobs. We're sitting at 11,000 at mid-year. We will surpass the target. On EPWP jobs, our target was 14,000 jobs in the non-state sector. I need to be very clear, in the non-state sector, which we act as implementing agents. Already, we're sitting at 33,000, over 33,000 jobs. And you can see how we've done that. Just as I was reminding members, this was our high-level value chain. In other words, if you were to ask the business of the IDT, it's around community development, it's around institutional support, and it's around program management. These are the three cardinal areas. In the broader reports that we've distributed, we've analyzed what we've done on program management, what we've done on community, and what we've done on institutional development. There are related things that are coming out there that honorable members might have expressed an interest, and we believe there are policy recommendation areas that this committee needs to be considering going forward around the program management area. Starting with the alternative construction methods, the scope of the methods, and honorable members have asked for this information. What is the extent of savings that you're driving through the alternative construction methodology? On the far right, you've got the percentage per school in terms of the top schools that have been allocated for the alternative construction method. 55% savings, we believe we can realize within that. If you look at the column next to that of 55%, that would be the cost if we were to build the same kind of classrooms in schools. It would cost the department 180 million. With alternative construction, it will cost 96 million. I think this was raised earlier on in another presentation. So we're beginning to realize the savings, at least in utilizing those three methodologies. There are hundreds of them, but we're simply benchmarking these three as methodologies we can utilize. This, I think, honorable members would have seen. This is the school you visited in Willowville. On the far left at the top there, that's how the structure looks like. It does cause a lot of concern when you go to communities and you build that, because they believe that you're building them a tent. But in the long run, when you get to the bottom right, you do come out with a school that looks like a school. Our emerging observations, as I've said, ACMs are faster and cost-effective. And I think we'll keep hammering this particular point. They've got comparative features. One of the biggest difficulties was to market or to convince communities to take in this, because they felt that we're building temporary structures. But when you subject it to all sorts of tests, SABS and so on, you are able to actually show comparative features in terms of acoustics, in terms of fire and hazard, although they're quite comparative with conventional methodology. However, they have acute training needs, which will explain some of the time delays that you will experience. So if I'm building this structure with trained people, it might take 8 weeks to 9 weeks. But because I must teach the local community on how to utilize this new methodology, this new construction methodology, it will take slightly longer. And the specific needs that are required in terms of training to run those alternative construction methodologies. There's a policy issue, and why I'm raising this, because when we start prioritizing skills development, not just as a committee, but as parliament, we ought to be then saying, if it's a growth area, somewhere along the way, the committee that deals with higher education and training needs to be identified as an area of potential growth, and therefore must couple it with appropriate skills. This links to the next point around social facilitation being paramount, because then you must engage the communities on the method. You're not just saying where's the school going to be located, but you're saying the school is going to be located here, and these are the needs that we need to build that. So social facilitation takes a long time. ACMs are also generally more capital intensive. I think the committee has raised this as an issue previously. And because you're chasing time, you have to find a way to balance the time together with the labor needs. And unfortunately, the nature of the ACMs are such that they're more capital intensive than conventional methodology. There are ways around it which we can propose going forward. The other thing has got to do with the market itself. ACM technologies are largely in the large cities. So the school in Willowvale, we had to employ two contractors, one in Cape Town and another one in Johannesburg. There are no ACMs that are sitting in Willowvale. And that, for us, is a cause for concern and requires some policy intervention to build. So there must be a conscious decision to build those industries in rural South Africa, which would link with the CRDP program. So that we're not just saying infrastructure is a growth sector for CRDP, but a particular percentage of that infrastructure growth must be driven by ACM if they're going to accelerate delivery for us. The second most important thing is that these technologies rest in the hands of a few. If I may venture, a few that are in minority. So again, that presents particular dynamics around how you can work with those ACM companies to move empowerment indicators. That's something else that probably the committee would want to consider from a policy perspective. Nonetheless, I must say, Chairperson, and I must venture to say that it would be useful to set targets in terms of ACM to accelerate delivery. And none of those targets in the infrastructure sector exist, where we say we're going to consciously use these technologies for X percentage of our expenditure to drive our service delivery. The second portfolio that we wish to highlight is the water and sanitation. The water and sanitation portfolio we wish to highlight because many committees have expressed an interest in the portfolio itself. And there's been lots of misconceptions of the role of the IDT within that, or should I say, the role of the IDT in non-delivery in relation to this. And so we thought that it would be quite important that this committee be taking the confidence for them to understand the context in which we've been operating on. The award, and it's not what had been reported in the paper, over $1 billion awarded to the IDT to do the human settlement portfolio and rural infrastructure. It's $700 million over a 3-year period. In year number one, we were sitting at about $100 million, or so close to about $100 million in allocation. I must say, and I must venture to say, year number one means from January to March, because that MOU was signed in December, towards the end of December. So really, year one is not year one per se, but year one is got to do with 3 months of delivery. Progress in the project, as I said, has been subject to many perceptions. In year one, which is what I wish to highlight here, in year one, that in that first 3 months, we only managed to deliver about 2,000 ports in that first 3 months, which meant that we have a backlog that we have to address in this first 2 quarters of the year, that's up to now. That gives us the total of 5,733 households, which is a carry-through from last year. Let me also venture to say that the target for this year is 16,000 of these facilities over the year. It's an allocation of about $132 million. But nonetheless, on the backlog, we've already completed 4,900. By the end of this quarter, we would have completed the backlog. So that's just for the information of the committee. On EPWP, I won't venture because I think the department will spend more time on this in their future presentation. However, of great concern is the reduction of work days, and I think the summit would have also highlighted this. We've reduced the number of work days, which has got an adverse effect on actually the targeted communities that we're going to engage. Secondly, the non-provision of non-wage incentives. First of all, it's really unfair to expect an NGO running in Duba that's doing excellent work to actually run its institution on 1% overhead. Because no institution sitting around this table runs its business on 1% overhead.
So that's one important point that we need to be taking back and forth on the non-state sector. The second thing that we should be taking forward on the non-state sector is the potential to create large number of jobs will be on the larger NGOs. Your health systems trust, for an example. Now, those NGOs withdraw from the non-state sector because of the 1%. So it means we can't drive our targets on job creation simply because the larger ones say, no, but it's not worth my effort to try and create jobs for the government, but only get 1% over it. And again, so the potential we could explore is less because we're dealing with the smaller NGOs. If we could target the larger ones, we'd actually get greater numbers. Then, we are looking at the non-state sector, and this relates to the job creation model that the portfolio committee has asked us for. But we are looking at what is the potential, because a couple of years ago, in fact, more than a couple of years ago, in 1998, an organization did a research in terms of civil society. What does it contribute to GDP? What is its potential of employment creation, and so on? That's the work that we want to do in the non-state sector for it to deliver that job creation model. We've just illustrated here Umam Uluthuli, one of the EPWP caregivers, who's always grateful of the little resources that she can receive. But she'll always say that more would be much better.
She's saying that in a dilapidated classroom where I was expecting IDT after a presentation, IDT to take care of the building. It's a social responsibility. We're going to find look at the ceiling there.
Chairperson, I accept that, and I think it's something that we can consider. However, if the administrative costs were increased, it means Maluthuli would be able to actually put the ceiling, because that's what actually the administrative costs talk about. So yes, we can address Maluthuli, but remember that there's probably 50,000 other Maluthuli, which we will not be able to address unless we make a policy intervention that addresses the needs of all the Maluthuli. And I think that's the point we're trying to make around the administration cost. But nonetheless, Chairperson, we will look at this particular project so that we can deal with it. Potentially, the areas of growth around crime prevention, that's the justice facilities and the SAS facilities. Renewable energies have become something that is not just topical, but is about sustainable development in itself. As well as corporate social responsibility projects, as I said, there's a potential growth area within that. We're finding more and more corporates approaching the IDT, saying, we'd like you to assist us with our labor social plan, for an example, for you to give us those social outcomes that we are unable to pursue as corporates. This on the far left there is Ntuba Duba Court. The reason why we've put... Ntuzuma Court. The reason why we've put the Ntuzuma Court is because, first of all, you can see the structure is alternative in terms of construction. It's more environmentally friendly than most of the buildings that we've put before. So that's Ntuzuma Court. On the far right is Remfesma. That, I think, we showed to the portfolio committee previously. And that's the sports ground where they use solar to light during the night so they can play football at night, because that's when drugs are most taken at night and alcohol is most abused at night. So that's a potential growth area. On the far bottom left there is a CSI project that we're running with a Chinese company called Huawei. Those students that you see, there's 12 of them at the bottom there. No, there's 10 of them at the bottom there. They are in China as they're sitting there. They went on ICT exposure to go see how ICT can be done in China. It is our intention that once they graduate, these are the ones that are going to man our ICT hub in rural South Africa, as opposed to go and work in Johannesburg and Cape Town. On the far right is another corporate social responsibility program. That's us consulting with the chief of Longshio in Mpumalanga. In Longshio, Philips is doing a solar energy project to look at alternative energy as a way to fuel off-grid. Because if we wait for the grid to come, it might take longer for those people to see light in every sense of the world. If you look at our revenue in terms of our financials and management fees, our program expenditure, 1.8 billion. Our projections are sitting at 2.2. I've addressed the issue of management fees, it's 46 million. And then NDA is 81 million. Just to bring a sense of what we are trying to achieve, if we could make sure that at least, and you will see our recovery rate is 3.6%, that's what we're projecting at the end of the year. If we could, over a period, and I must hazard to say, over a period of 5 to 6 years, get the ID to a position where it can actually make that recovery rate at about 10%, it would mean that the IDC doesn't have to rely on the national treasury solely. It means we can effectively use the resource better. So that's why we highlight this. It's a long-term strategy, but we hope to get to that to be able to finance or self-finance the IDC. The revenue and expenditure to date, you can see our investment income. The critical thing to notice here, honorable members, is our investment income is not giving us as much as it used to be. Understandably, because 3-4 years ago, we had 1.something billion in the account. Now, at the end of the financial year, we'll be sitting with about 190 million in our account. Can I put it slightly differently? If we never got an injection at the beginning of the financial year, it means the IDT will only last up to June next year. That's the practical of what the 60 actually highlight. Our expenses are employment costs. That 98% does not refer to employment costs. It does not refer to us being 98%. It refers to what was spent against the budget. So that's a saving, to put it that way. We intended to spend 99 million on salaries. We spent 98. So we've saved 2% on that particular area of stuff. Travel costs as well, we're trying to contain them, as you can see. Actuals, 11 million over this first 6 months. Then by quarter, you can see the progressions. On average, on employment costs, we're spending about 48 million per quarter. Administrative expenses at about 30 million, if you look at the two quarters and so on. That's the movement of the main fund. That focus to 31 March 2012. 190 million. And if there's one thing that I would like, Chairperson, if you could ever remember, even if it was at midnight, is that forecast of 31 March 2012, 190 million. That is a signal of the obituary of the IDT and that something drastic happened. Our staff establishment, our occupancy rate is looking fairly well. I must remind honorable members that because of the transformation of the IDT, we've frozen some of those posts. So those 35 are vacancies that exist, which we've chosen not to fill because of where we're going forward. But a bulk of them are as a result of the ending of contracts. You'll recall when we started our transformation process, we said that we'll not put everybody on a full-time basis until we know the future shape of the IDT. Those contracts have lapsed, which results in a bulk of them being vacancies or senior vacancies. The corporate governance, we've met every meeting. The remuneration committee, as you can see at the bottom there, had scheduled a meeting. It did in fact meet on the 10th of August. And there it's reflected as it did not meet, but it did actually meet the REMCOM. But nonetheless, the illustration is that we are meeting when we should be meeting and are making the decisions that we need to be making when we need to be making them. Our recommendation is therefore that the committee notes the quarter report. Note the revised targets, and I need to be very clear here, Chairperson. We are not asking you to approve them because our board has not approved them. Once our board approves them or our board gives us different direction, we'll be able to formally communicate on what those revised targets might be. So this is just a discussion document rather than the revised targets themselves. And that's it. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, IDT. Honorable members, presentation from the entities have been presented. And let's have 10 minutes break and be here exactly 10 past 11. And let's see. I'm going to go to the next one. Can we go back to the business of the day? And can we all take our seats? And all members, what an achievement. And the mandate of regions signing leases, contract leases, has been withdrawn. Let's give ourselves a pat on the back. Regions are not allowed to sign any lease agreement. So to us, it's an achievement as a committee. Thank you very much. Let's proceed. And we start with agreement. Agreement, Honorable Madloba, will be followed by Honorable Gayla. Agreement, on agreement.
Yeah, thanks, Honorable Chair. Thank you very much to the presentation today, and we congratulate you, Chair, for just arranging the way it has been presented to give enough time to the presentation. Chair, the first one, I'm looking at the target and the actual. I'm not sure when we target, is it a realistic target that we do if you see the way that we have achieved the actual? It's more than what we really anticipated to achieve. Whether we do the small target so that we can exceed the target, it's just something that I'm not sure of, but we appreciate that we have really met the target. But I'm having that question in mind to say, is it realistic, the target that we put in place? Secondly, the issue of the product that is being encouraged, that we must really focus on the cheap product. But my comment will be to say that, but it must not compromise the quality. Because these days we are facing the climate change, and most of the people that are being affected are those poorest of the poor that have got this, the products in their houses that are not really of the quality. But yes, we must focus at it, but also look at the quality. On page 5, I want to check. I see transformation. As Rima is saying that, no, we are really achieving the transformation, and they are putting down the breakdown of the designated group and so on and so forth. What I want to check is whether they do have employment equity plan. They did have employment equity plan that they have targeted, because if you look at talking about women and the black, and also the question to say that which level are they in, these people, that we are saying we are achieving the transformation. Because we may have a lot of these designated groups, but at a lower level. Maybe if we can get a clarity on that one. And also to say, is it in line with the demographics? If we can get that clarity, Honorable Chair. Thank you.
Honorable Gayla.
On page 4, your slide there on top, I think it's bullet number 4. Much more can be done by giving the agency a legal mandate to act. What do you need to get this legal mandate? Can you just please explain us what you need? Then, the new technology. Your new technology is good, but it only happens in cities, Joburg and Pretoria mainly. Now, one would like to come to the department, because I think the department needs to give us an answer on this. because you've got limited funds as agreement. How do we roll out this new technology to provinces, districts, municipalities, and rural? Because it's very good on paper, and it needs to be rolled out, and I don't think they have the funds to do that. As a department, what plans do you have that we can roll this out? Yeah, the bricks that are being made in what? In the soil cement system bricks in Limpopo, and your road, thin concrete road system. You know, Chairperson, if you remember when we went to Eastern Cape, where that road did not exist. One thing of this year, because this is a very new technology, we would definitely have a road that will exist if the new technology is rolled out there. But then, because of the limited funds, they don't get much for, you know. What plans does the department have to roll this out? Because at the end of the day, this is your entity. Do you have any plans? And what would you suggest to roll this out even to the rural people? Because building material is very expensive. You know, if you go to my area, my village is about 200 kilometers from town. That is called Mukhail and Elubi. 200 kilometers from town to there. So building material is very expensive, but how can we roll this out, this new technology? Those are my two questions. Thank you.
Honorable November. Thank you, Chairperson, and also thank you for the presentation. It's just in addition with what Honorable Madlopa has asked, that on the transformation slide, one is just becoming worried. It's almost to say in most of the departments or the entities, it's the recruitment plan or plan to recruit those people who are differently able.
Thank you. Honorable Wanyamawila.
Thank you very much, Chair. Let me start by thanking our colleagues for the presentations made. Chairperson, when looking at this report, somewhere AGRIMA has exceeded their target. So what I wanted to check is that were there any financial implications with regards to that? If yes, where were these funds, from which programs were these funds shifted? Because if you budget that will do three things at the end of the day, you're doing six, you know, it's good, but we need to think of the financial implications with regards to that, if I can be clarified on that one.
Thank you. AGRIMA, you have identified five programs. And I'm happy to say you have made the five, achieved a lot on those programs, as indicated by Honorable Wanyamawila. But my main worry that I want the department to note is the legal mandate to act and criminalizing defaulters. Because there's no way that you can be able to make an impact if there's material that is not SABS. That is not that does not meet SABS standards. Like we indicated in the last meeting, there's nothing that you can do. You just look and watch to say, can't the issue of a mandate be looked into the Department of Public Works? And also the issue of funding, to say the funds that are allocated to them, I don't think it's enough. We need to look into that. That's what I wanted to say. Otherwise, thank you for meeting your targets. Follow up, Mr. Gayler.
Yeah, no, I just missed two issues here. Regarding what you are saying, Chairperson, what you are saying is a major problem. There's a lot of stuff that comes into South Africa that is not approved. And I think the department needs to come on board on this one. No, they are corrugated iron that you can just fold with your hands. Just take it, you fold it with your hands. So, in line what you are saying, yeah, I think the department needs to take the strongest. Second, lastly, Chairperson, you know, in our engagement with these entities, I want all of them to answer this one here. I have to compliment IDT, Chairperson. Every engagement, there is
jumping the gun.
No. I'm coming to this, but
okay.
I'm taking a longer route.
Okay.
There is a board member present. One is worried when the other entities usually don't have board members. A board member is not a chairperson only of an entity. There are about 6 or 7. Can these other entities please explain to us why are there no board members when they present to us? It's very important. Thank you.
Can I maybe respond? I think it's because of the funds that they don't have funds. Maybe it's because of the funding, I don't know. No, they will respond to themselves, we are done with question. Baba Stole, please spare me.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, first of all, what I want to find out, on Friday we was in Pitoy with CFIR, with Agrima. They are using the technology in building of houses. So if you check the IDT, they are using technology, ACM. So what I want to find out is the relationship between these two major authorities, because they are all using technologically methodologies.
Wait. I remember we don't have time. Can we please? Mguni?
In the human resources, I wanted to check with the agreement that they have a plan of bringing in youth in the employment of agreement, because soon you will need to have new blood.
Agreement? Short and to the point.
Yes. Also, on the issue of transformation, I see here, according to the definition by the Agrima, is that transformation is just filling in the post with different demographics. I want to check, because I don't see the policies. In your understanding, does transformation mean filling in the positions with different categories? What about the policies? I'm hearing that it's CSIR that we are using, the policies of CSIR. But the policy
members, can we not repeat what we raised when they were presenting the annual report? Can we avoid that and deal with the presentation and not raise issues that we raised with them? Agrima?
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Thank you, Honorable Members, for the question, which I'll try and respond to. I will respond to the ones which have been The first question was regarding the targets and actual achieved. These targets are based on historical performance. In other words, in the 43 years of existence, we have had an annual output, and the targets are based on the historical performance And I must say that we have actually increased the targets in line as performance has increased. We've increased targets. But they're also in line with global organizations, technical assessment organizations of a similar size. What I mean is that AGRIMA South Africa is a member of the World Federation of Technical Assessment Organizations. And similar other members of economies who are about the same size as AGRIMA, our outputs are similar to their outputs. One must take into consideration that the building and construction industry, the innovations are limited globally. There's only so much that has been developed. So our targets are in line and realistic with historical performance and global performance. Honorable members, the second question was, our products are less expensive, yes, but not inferior in performance. They are actually superior in performance to conventional materials. We test them for fitness for purpose. In other words, the performance must be superior or better, and they must meet the fitness for purpose. They must be able to do what they're supposed to do. So they may cost less, but they're not inferior. They are actually superior in performance to conventional. On target five, on page five, transformation achieved. We are, yes, part and parcel of the CSR, and therefore all our policies are part and parcel of the CSR. And therefore the CSR does have employment equity policies in place, and we do comply with those employment equity policies of the CSR, and national employment equity targets are achieved. The levels of staff breakdown in line with demographics, the senior people within the organization are all... There has been transformation across the board and amongst the senior people as well. On the question of the legal mandate, we are working closely with the Department of Public Works, and we are hopeful, and as was mentioned three weeks ago, and reported here on the 20th of October, the departmental representative gave a very clear indication of where the process of the legal mandate for creating AGRIMA as a legal entity and was reported to the portfolio committee. Therefore, we will comply with whatever mandate we are given going forward. The department is dealing with that exercise and we're working closely with them. New technology happens in cities. That's a question for the department to ask, to respond, because it relates to the rollout potential, the rollout strategy by the department, which was requested from the department. The question of transformation or the recruitment plan for disabled persons, we are focusing on all our recruitment to try and recruit disabled persons, and as soon as we do get one, we will obviously recruit them. Financial implications of exceeding targets. We have employed cost-cutting measures in-house, which has meant making sure that we manage our costs within our income. Therefore, the improved target output has not been met by increased financial spend, but we would welcome additional financial allocation should it be available. We are happy with what we get, but we would welcome additional financial allocation. In five programs, the question of the legal mandate, I said, is a national policy issue, and we're working with the department to have this issue resolved. The question of imported staff coming to the country, I think, was responded to 2 weeks ago, but suffice to say the departmental representative stated that it is AGRIMA looks at innovative construction materials, and standardized materials fall outside the mandate, the current mandate. And I want to repeat again that whatever mandate we're given going forward, we will comply with it. I note that on Friday, the departmental committee from a portfolio committee for human settlements did visit the CSR, And they did see a whole host of these examples of innovative construction materials, not only the ones I mentioned today, but a whole range of others which the CSIR is working on. And the Sitole was there. And the question of IDT rolling out the schools, we work closely with the IDT for the selection in the making sure that the products which are alternative do get AGRIM accreditation, and we work closely with them. However, in the implementation of the project, in the rollout, we do not get involved in that because it's outside our mandate. But we work closely with Sistembi and her team in making sure that we do give them support where they need support in terms of making sure that the products are fit for purpose. At this stage, I'd like to welcome the portfolio committee when they're in Pretoria to come and visit the CSIR and AGRIMA to see the various different technologies. We will see, it's one thing to hear and see the photos, but it's a different thing to touch and feel and actually see these different technologies in practice. The question of HR bringing in youth, yes, we do have an outreach program where we go to schools and recruit the best students and bring them in through our bursaries and learnerships and make sure, and we have actually in the last year recruited a couple of students who have actually gone through this process, and yes, we do bring in youth and ensure that the younger people come through. So I think I've responded to the questions which are asked. Thank you very much.
Thank you, AGRIMA. Are we done with AGRIMA? Department, Honorable Wanya Mavila.
Chairperson, I'm making a follow-up on the issue of the legal mandate. I think there's a representative from the department. Maybe if we can be brief.
They want to respond to.
Oh, please.
Thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. On the issue of the legal mandate, I think we briefed the committee last time to say we've developed a business case, and because we still have to brief the minister, obviously, because of the new development. But because there's a requirement for regulatory impact assessment, there's quite a bit of a process that we go through with a national treasury, but the process is ongoing. But specifically on the question that was raised about criminalizing non-certified products, in actual fact, our business case talks to that. In South Africa, in future, you will either have SADF approval or you will have AGRIMA approval. We have done a lot of consultation. We've consulted the customs so that products coming in, they can have either of those two certificates. Because of the affiliation of AGRIMA with the World Federation of Development, with World Federation of Testing Agencies, they have that agreement. So we'll be able to check products coming in through customs as well as the products, our products going out or being used internally. But on the products being used internally, we have started to consult with the local government for building inspectors to support us, because the products, they come actually at a local level. If you don't have building inspectors and approving not only the building but also the products, it might not be possible for AGRIMA on their own to be able to inspect. So the plans are in place. All these organizations I'm talking about, they are in support, but obviously we'll be going through the members through a bill. We're just going the formal process with a national treasury. On the issue of the rollout, we started the rollout. The schools that were mentioned by IDT, that is part of the rollout. As you have heard, at this point, because these are new technologies, we're doing them on a pilot basis. For the past year, we have given IDT 12 schools. I must admit that we don't have a program because we're testing them. And as IDT has just mentioned, it's good products, but there are some challenges that as we implement and roll out, we need to address. There is a program that is ongoing that was started by the previous deputy minister, where you take literally, when you do a house development, you take soil and you mix with cement and the technology that has been approved by AGRIMA as well, and agreeing with you, whatever we do, we roll out as public works, we will get it tested by AGRIMA. But obviously, when we actually implement, we will implement with a number of partners. Some of the challenges that we have, and I think the question that is being raised about transformation, it goes beyond just the 12 staff members that are in AGRIMA. It talks to the product, and again, IDC raises that there are very few companies out there, black companies, that can do this product. I don't know if there's any, but if there are, they are really very few. So that transformation must talk to those issues.
Thank you. Can you make sure that the issues that you are raising here, they be speeded up so that we can be able to progress? Can we now move to CBE? CBE, Department of Public Works. There are two issues that you are to be blamed on the CBE. One is the built environment endeavor that did not take place because of your delay. Number two, memorandum of agreement and quoting of mandates. It's your delay, and you must take the blame and make sure that you. The two issues are attended to by the department. Honorable Madoba.
No, thank you.
Honorable Gayla. Honorable Sten Hazen. Honorable Wanyamavila.
No, Chair, you have covered me on that one. I'm not going to deal with them because I also noted it. I will start on page 12. I want to check here the financial implication on the capital assets as well as the professional and special services. I can see that you have exceeded the budget. Where is it going to be covered, this particular budget? Because it's about 615% that you have exceeded and 33%. Also on page 5, the first program administration, you have indicated that you are experiencing challenges regarding implementation of the quality management system. I want to check what are the exact challenges that you are experiencing, and how are you planning to overcome those particular challenges? Maybe if we can get that one. And on the program two, I also see that you have submitted to the minister, maybe in future, number one, monitoring visit and so on, and the submission, if you can indicate in future that what is the progress, when it was submitted, because you'll find that you submitted long time ago, the follow-up has not been done. It will assist us as members to say. And I want also to check which field or course are these students attending, because we are facing the challenge of the scarce skills in the country. Maybe it will assist us to know that those particular students that are attending those courses and has been visited. And lastly, Chair, is on program 3. There is a problem that is saying, however, targets on the COPs are likely to be missed. I want to establish here, before you implement any project, don't you do a research on what will be required to implement that particular project. Then when you are starting to implement and then you face that the infrastructure cannot support those COPs. Maybe if you don't do that when you are dealing with the issue of planning, maybe it will be advisable that in future, before you start, during the planning period, you also do the research, you know what is it that is going to be required, so that you cannot block progress on those particular projects. So, actually, Chair, I will pause there and stop.
Honorable Gayla?
No, just, I think about two issues here. On your transformation, I think I went through some of your council's reports, and when one had a look at their report, Chairperson, especially the engineering council, we have a problem on transformation, a major problem. And I wouldn't like us to take this lightly. We're sitting with a problem with our department that has no response. And we've got CBA who's managing these councils here. We need skills, and we need them urgently. That is why, Chairperson, the department cannot do its core function, because there are no skills. And on one side, there's no transformation in your council. What? Just be open to us. Where is the problem? Why do we have to sit with the same problem year in and year out where there's no transformation? Secondly, Chairperson, somebody dropped an envelope in my house. It was a student who wanted placement. He pleaded. He needs placement. He's doing his fourth year at Winchester University. I don't know him. He does not know me. But he just cannot get placement. And that is the same problem with transformation. What do you all do with placement of students who need to be assisted? What is your plan? I mean, CBA is getting finance from government, but there is just no change at all. We have a skills problem in this country, and there's just totally no changes are not there. So just please explain to this committee, what are your plans, especially with those that do not want, these councils that do not want to work with you. Thank you.
Honorable Steinhagen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I'm on page 13 of the presentation, under the risk identification, and the risk there regarding the inability to fully execute the mandate given to the CBE by the state. If we could understand what's being done to try and mitigate against that. And the second question I have relates to the proposed SACB bill, South and Council of Built Environment Bill, whether CBE has had any further progress in this, in relation to this bill, in terms of its passage. Thank you.
Honourable Mayama Vila.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chair, the first one will relate to the over expenditure. What I wanted to find out, I think my colleagues have touched on it, but I wanted to check whether the proper procedures were followed, because when you exceed the budget, there are certain things that you have to do and report to Treasury and give reasons for the deviation. Maybe if I can get an indication whether the PFMA was being followed. Chairperson, when looking at this report, there are lots of submissions that have been made to the department, and it's worrying. I think here we need to engage the minister. We need to talk to the minister as a committee, so that at the end of the day, you know, I'm just thinking about if the documents that are in the table, whether of the minister or whosoever in the department, that are delaying the progress of the entities. Because when looking at this report, this has been submitted to the department. This has been submitted to the department. This has been submitted to the department. I think it's really a concern, Chairperson. Chairperson, I wanted to check with CBE whether do they have the employee wellness program. Because even when talking with the department, it's hardly to hear about this employee wellness program. How do we assist the people that we're working with to perform? We know that we've got this challenge of the HIV and AIDS and other chronic diseases. How do we take care of the people that we're expecting to perform some of the mandate of the department and also of the entity? Because if the department also is not taking this matter seriously, I think the entities will also will relax on this employee wellness program. Then the other one, Chair, I was just checking at the CBE document here. somewhere you talk about, I don't know whether it's documented in Nayunina, no Mayam Net. You talk about the new performance there. The new performance management and development policy. But when looking at your presentation, Angaboni Luto, because I think the report that we're getting, Chair, must be in line with the APP that has been submitted to us, because the activities have been broken down according to the quota. So if they've said we're going to do 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 in the first quota, if they haven't done that, I think it needs to appear on the report that we plan to do 1, then we'll fail. That is why when dealing with this report, we need to put the APP this side and also put the report on the other side so that we check whether are they reporting on what they have planned or they're just telling us what we want to hear and ignoring some of the activities that they've planned to do. Because when checking at this document, there are lots of things that are not appearing on the presentation, which they were supposed to tell us about. But they're not appearing on the presentation, they're appearing on the other documents. I think that is what we need to also check too. Thank you.
Honorable Stole.
Thank you, Chair. I think mine is on page 15. I know, Chair, that we have been asked this question for several times, but it doesn't look like they are going to achieve this, because if you check that breakdown of professionals and registered of candidates, white are still 66%. There is no changes. Since we have been speaking about this, but there is no changes. So now what I want to find out, what can we do to help them for the portfolio committee? To influence the department to help them on this issue, because it is a chaos actually if you are looking at it. Another one, Chair, is that one of female and male and men and male on page 17, that 12% and 88%, Chair, it doesn't work away. I don't know what we can do to help them.
Honorable Matala. Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I think I'm covered by Member Ngwenya Mabila on the cost centers, the variances to date, because they look negative. If they can clarify, how did they go about the process they've taken? Thanks, Chairperson. Honorable Mngoni.
Thanks, Chairperson. In the presentation, it is said that the target was to submit 4 ID identification of work for 4, call them professional counselors, the professional counselors. That's the target. But they were only able to submit 2. Now, my thinking tells me that it's not possible that you can submit identification of work for a professional counsel that has not signed a memorandum of agreement with you. That's question number one. Therefore, it means that it impedes into your target. Now, what it did not report is that how far does that go in terms of impediment for you to, you know, reach your target? And, I'm aware that you will say that as long as that this act is not there, actually there's nothing that you can do. But of course that is an impediment. You can't claim to, you will be able to submit the identification of work for a professional counsel that does not want to sign a memorandum of agreement. Now, is it not fair to ask that which professional counsel did not sign and which one signed? But last time when we spoke, we said, I strongly believe that the EXA did not sign. And somewhere in corridors, somebody said that Esther did not sign. Chairperson.
Can we not bring?
Okay. No, Esther did not sign. Let me put it that way. Esther has not signed. And as such, Chairperson, our concern, this concern, the CEO who left Ntatezulu knew very well that we were concerned about the engineering council. That is where the gist of job creation will come from. Actually, that's where all this country will be frustrated in terms of development if EXA is not on board. Now, my question would be, what efforts are CBE going to do to ensure that this professional council who are reluctant to sign, who just say we will sign, but we will sign on our time, we will take our time to sign, to enforce them that to sign. If there is nothing that can be done, I think we must be told that the presentation here, Chairperson, was very mild.
Differentiate between church and parliament meeting. Fela when we are driving, because we look to my LNG.
Chairperson, that is understatement. I'm saying that the transformation of this country depends solely on this professional council to come on board. Now, they are not coming on board because they are still led by people who don't want transformation. Therefore, for me to shumaya the Chairperson is not that. I'm just worried that we said it, that the transformation is very slowly in the CBE. The frustration is growing every day.
You made your point.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Honorable Mwane.
Thank you.
I'm sorry.
No, it's just a very small concern, Chairperson. The presenter was saying here that the stakeholder engagement is a problem. Is there anything that we can do? Because where information is being shared, I think people are becoming empowered. Maybe it's because of that, all stakeholders haven't come together so that this information could be rolled out. Thank you.
CBE, I thought in your presentation you indicate that you did have a meeting with the professional councils, because in the last meeting we requested that you go and have a meeting to iron out issues that you raised, to say you are not comfortable, they don't come, they don't sign memorandums and all that and all that. I thought in your presentation you first indicated. Honorable No One.
Thanks. Most of the issues have been covered by my colleagues. Except for a few. On page 12, CBE is saying latest execution of some projects due to human resource constraints in some departments or divisions. And then the plan to rectify that is CBE is currently optimizing work organization in the research and policy department. But we don't have, actually in all these plans to rectify, we don't have timelines. So I think otherwise we'll say the same, one and the same thing over and over again. Also on page 18, the graph there shows that the male and female gender profile of candidates. But CBE is not saying, what are you doing to improve the situation? And lastly, Comrade, Chairperson, is the issue of CBE bill. I think on that one, I will really blame the department. This has been, I don't know, it's been an issue for as long as I can remember. And we've been saying as Parliament, we'll assist you with this CBE bill. But the department is not coming forth. And I must say, Chairperson, I was really worried in our last meeting with the acting DG when he told us that to have a student, it takes so many years. I mean, so what? We've got kids there that qualified a long time ago, and we're not doing much to assist those kids. Chairperson, I think the department must answer on this one, to say, when is this bill coming? Because most of the problem and challenges CBE is having is through this CBE bill that has not been passed for the past, I don't know how many years. Thanks, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honourable Members. Honourable Members, yesterday as I was entering O.R. Tambo International Pharmacy, I was blocked, a chemist, yes, I was blocked by this guy by the name of Kubu Mohala, who literally blocked me and said he walked from Rema Church to the airport and he has been drinking water for the past 3 days because he doesn't have food and he has got BSc, IT and honors and this government is not doing anything for them. And you can see how frustrated they are. Why should some of us be targets? Because he was saying, I saw you on TV, you're in public works, what are you doing for us to get jobs? And he gave me all these particulars in this piece of paper to say, CBE, there are kids there, down there, who are frustrated. What are we doing about it? And I promised this young guy, say tomorrow we are meeting entities and the department. I'm going to give them your information for them to come back to you, to interact with you, to say how can they assist you. Because I don't have an answer as a member of parliament. I can only forward information to the department and the entities. IDT. CIDP. What are we doing about these kids? CBE. Really, it's a challenge. Yeah, at the airport, I'm not saying, he said to me, somebody said, go to the airport, you will see them flying out to Cape Town, and you block them. That's what he said. And he had my picture to say, Mama, Kubonimo TV, and he's from Free State. Can we have answers on some of these things?
Chair, if they can ask, Chair, to say, what did they do with the CVs for those young people that submitted the CVs to the Department of Public Works? When the minister made a call, because there were so many children that were putting forward their CVs.
Honorable Nwane, Chairperson, it shows that we are sitting on a time bomb. And I'm not too sure if really the department is aware of that. To them, it's like business as usual, and we are really concerned about that. Thank you.
CBM, that is.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In answering these questions, I will ask my colleagues to assist me from time to time. They've started throwing papers at me, but I'll give you time to answer some of the questions. Right. The first question with regard to why are there no board members when we present, we have tried to bring our chairperson along, and there is a specific reason. Our chairperson is here. Behind me. And there's a specific reason why we normally bring our chairperson, we don't bring other board members. It's because our chairperson has got side to the work of most of the committees in our council. So if a question is raised that involves the work of any of the committees, she's the best person to be able to answer that. Otherwise, there's no specific preference why we should not bring other council members. on the negative variances between, maybe let's start with the built environment in Daba. Public Works, it was directed really at Public Works, why we haven't got a response. But, you know, what I said is just that we just want to move it to a two-yearly issue and we'll get a response. Memorandum of an agreement. I will try to address this question together with the comments around EXA and whether EXA is signed or it's not signed. We had a meeting of registrars yesterday. Two of the professional councils, SECAP and the quantity surveyors, are the ones that have not indicated whether they will sign or not sign. The rest of the professional councils have committed to sign, including EXA. So EXA will sign the memorandum of agreement. The two that have not yet indicated to sign, SECAP, the registrar, has tabled this matter in the council, but the council has not made a decision. The quantity surveyors have requested to meet myself and the chief operating officer because they say there are issues they don't understand. They want to take us through them so that we can resolve them, and we have agreed to meet them. What happens if at the end of this process they still don't sign? Our agreement and what we communicated yesterday is that we will engage you in this process, but at the end of this process, if we haven't received an intent to sign, we take it that you are refusing to sign. But we can't, in all fairness, say it today when they still seek some engagement with us. Negative variance on the professional fees and on the assets. I will ask the CFO maybe to just comment on those two negative variances. Yeah, now.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson, members of the committee. Chairperson, I think what we failed to mention perhaps in our presentation at the beginning of our presentation was the challenges that we have in terms of financial constraints. Here you would note that in our, I'm on slide 11, where we've got cost centers. In there, the budget to date that we are presenting of $29 million. This budget we actually developed in 2009 and has not increased. So you would recall that when I was presenting to the portfolio committee 3 weeks ago, I did mention that our increment was less than an inflation rate at that point in time. And I mentioned that we are having a financial constraint. This also ties hand in hand with the risk that we alluded to, that was alluded by our CEO, where we are unable to execute our mandate as we have no funds to execute them. Now, just to clarify why there was an overspending, in the previous financial year, we went into a strategic overview where we presented our business plan. In terms of that costing, we had costed our business plan at a 43 million rand to execute everything there, Chair. But however, Chair, that business plan was approved, but the funding thereof was never provided to the CDE. The challenge that we had in that misalignment was that the CDE then continued with some of the projects that were in the business plan. Some of them are, you mentioned, the community of practice where we started and then we have to abandon the project, as well as on the professional fees. There was a restructuring that was in the business plan. But however, we then executed those projects without the backing of the funding. Now, that puts the CBE in a quite a difficult position. What we are planning to do now is that we need to reassess our case, and that's what we're going to be doing in our midterm review, which is planned for the 10th of this month, I think in 2 days' time, where we will be checking with the budgets that we have, with the resources that we have, what is it that we will be able to do and what is it that we will be unable to do.
That will be then presented to our board and further to the ministry, and of course we will then highlight that issue to the portfolio committee so that the next time we come and present the quarterly report and say we were unable to deliver on XYZ, the committee is aware of those challenges that we have.
Thank you, CFO. The question on the quality management system. What are the challenges on the quality management system, and what do we intend to do? We sometimes, I'm not exactly sure of the date, we procured a quality management software, a quality management package. That was not used, i.e. we did not populate it with the information that we required to populate it, partly because we did not have the information. Now, to rectify the challenge without a long story, the quality management system, the key content of the quality management system is our business processes. It's our policies, our procedures, our standard operating procedures, and our standards. Now, to bring life to the quality management system, we are focusing on getting these documents approved so that we can load them in a system. At the moment, we have that those documents that we have that are approved are available on a server in our computer system. But, you know, a file on a server is not a quality management system. A quality management system must do version control. It must track changes on this document. We must be able to have automatic review triggers and so on and so on and so forth. So that is what we are going to do to fix our quality management system. The progress on the submissions, yes, we take that note. We have the date on which we submitted this. We are talking to the department on this document, and the department does respond to us. In future, we will provide specific feedback on this is the date on which we submitted the document, this is the response date on which we got the document. First of all, do you want to comment on the courses that the students are taking on the basic scheme?
Thanks, sir. Thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Committee members. In terms of our bursary scheme, the courses that the students take are all the courses within the built environment, within the space of the six professional councils. The breakdown of those can be provided to the committee, but it's in essence in the fields of engineering, architecture, landscape architects, quantity surveying, construction project management, and the valuation profession. So, and students will choose whether they want to do this within the comprehensive universities or they want to do it with the University of Technology. Thanks, sir.
The question on the communities of practice. The question was, when we launch this project, don't we do research to determine whether this project can be supported by our technology infrastructure or not? We do research. Our problem here, ma'am, was that when this project was conceptualized, Mapifo talked about our budget situation. When this project was conceptualized, at that point, we, on our budget of 42 million or whatever the figure was, we could afford additional bandwidth to support this program. On our reduced current budget, we can't support additional bandwidth. So. The technology people went on with a trial to see if this thing would work on our current bandwidth, and it just slowed everything down to the point where we took a decision that let's stop this thing because now it's starting to interfere with other people's regular work like emails and so on. That's the answer. We did do that, but at the moment we can't afford to buy more bandwidth, so that's why we are putting it on hold. Unless we get a technology that can use less bandwidth, we can't go with it because it's disrupting the other work. Transformation, I am going to leave it last. I can see my chairperson nodding here next to me. I'll leave that last so that she can assist me with that. Placement of students, what are we doing? First of all, for the students that we do sponsor, we do place them. We have received a request from a company that approached us and say, we are looking for students. We want you to place students with us. And WSP is the name of the company. Yes. And we are busy with that process. But that is an exception, more than a norm. Now, what I would just like to bring to the attention of the committee, and I'm not being defensive or defending anyone, is that the professionals themselves are not the industry. Let me explain what I mean. Many of these professionals, registered professionals, they work in companies that have got 5 or 6 partners or 7 partners. And that's the size of that professional consulting company. They don't actually employ people. They render services to industry. The challenge with placement normally lies with the third tier of the recipients of these services by professionals. For example, consulting engineers would consult, let's say, to manufacturing industries. Graduate engineers need to be placed in manufacturing industries, not necessarily with the professional council. The professional council only provide the mentors that are required to mentor these graduates so that they can be registered. So our problem goes further down the value chain. It is a problem for the CBE, it is a problem for the professional council, but I just want to highlight that there is another step down the value chain where our actual industries, the manufacturers, the miners, and so on, who employ these young graduates, need to take them on this training program so that they can be registered as professional engineers. If we rely on the professional councils only to put these people through the pipeline, we won't change this demographic.
Yeah.
It will take forever.
Yeah.
It will take forever.
Yeah.
So we need to bring our minds together on how we can involve this third tier of participants, the mines, the manufacturing industries, all these people who actually do the work, who must take these graduates in so that they can be mentored and they can then be registered.
No. That
is the explanation I just want to put forward. I'm not defending the professional countries, but I just want the honorable members to realize that the biggest potential lies beyond the professional countries.
Honorable members, I don't take this explanation. To say we'll have to rely on the mines and leave the professional councils as they are and not transform them, is it what you're saying?
No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying the professional.
My apologies. No.
Sorry, ma'am. Yeah. I'm saying the professional councils play a very critical role, ma'am, because they must provide the mentor for these students. But the students need to be placed in a place where they can be trained.
Honorable Gayla.
First of all, let us be clear.
Yeah.
You've got professional councils here under CPE. Then you've got the members, the companies. Now, what we are saying is the companies, most of those companies get work from where? Government. Now, what you and government should then be doing is that you come up with a legislation whereby you say anybody who gets work from us must assist these students. That is the only way that you can, unless you come up with a legislation, that is where the problem is.
Yeah.
That is where your problem is.
Thank you, Baba Gayla.
We are
speaking the same thing. Okay, continue, Baba. I'm sorry to interrupt you.
No problem.
I couldn't express myself. That's what I wanted to say. So no. I mean, I don't understand you properly.
Okay. I'm going to page 13. I want to see that the person on page 13. What is being done to mitigate the risk of our inability to execute the strategy? The first part of that question was answered by my CFO. The first part of that question was answered by my CFO. the first hindrance to meeting our strategy is, of course, the money, the budget. The second hindrance which we have identified is an organizational hindrance. It's our stakeholder management. And stakeholder management is our relationship with the professional council, and it is our relationship with our executive authority, with the department. So we have realized that, and we are working on that at all times. We are engaging the professional council. What is the progress on the bill? I'll leave that to the department to answer. Over expenditure, proper procedure followed. Do you want to comment on that, my people?
Can you speed up the CBE?
Thank you, Chairperson. In terms of the question on whether were proper procedures followed in line with PFMA, I need to say yes, Chair, they were followed. However, Chairperson, we do not have to request any approval from the National Treasury. The approval that I mentioned earlier would be that of requesting from the CEO and then further escalating that to our board. We also need to highlight those variances to our executive authority, who's the minister, and that has been done accordingly. So we have complied with PFMA in that regard.
Okay, thank you. Do we have employee wellness programs? Yes, we do. The performance management and development system, in the report, and I'm going to deal with this together with the question on the slides vis-a-vis the quarterly report that we submitted. In the quarterly report, we say on page 15 that we have reported that we haven't achieved our quarterly target. The new performance management and development policy submitted to HRC, we are still waiting approval of that performance and commitment performance and development policy. Now, the presentation which we did today, the PowerPoint presentation which we did today, is based on this report which we submitted. We just thought to pick out what we were the highlights. But if the committee feels that we need to present these tables table as it is, there's absolutely no problem. We can do that in the next presentation. But the information that's in here should agree with the information that's in this report. They are the same document. Chairperson, do you want to comment on transformation? That will be the last.
Thank you, Chairperson and members, honourable members of the Portfolio Committee. The two issues, really, the MOA and the transformation. I think from the MOA, if I could really just report back to the members that we have had a number of engagements, including calling the president of the various professional councils. We have sat with them, and we actually requested them in terms of giving an elaborative view and feedback and why they have not signed to date. And this was really for us the last step and last attempt, such that by the time, if we, by a particular period, as the CEO highlights, if we do not get the MOUs, we are submitting this to them, to the department, to then assist authoritatively, because those professional councils report to the department directly. But the intention was that the council itself from CBE wanted to also give it a last push and let's have an official commitment from these guys, because a lot of them we meet with the CEO or the registrars are committed. But behind the registrars are the presidents and the vice presidents who do not necessarily sometimes agree and share the same vision as we do. And that is why we actually did it in that particular way. So from here on, should we not be getting a mandate in signed MOUs anytime soon in the last couple of weeks or so, we are then engaging strongly with the department and that matter will be taken from there. And that's the issue really on the MOA. Coming to transformation. Transformation has been a critical concern to all of us, to an extent that we've actually now formed a separate committee that we call the Transformation Committee that we've just engaged as soon as the council appointed this new council. There's a transformation made up of the various chairpersons of the various committees. We've done and we are driving transformation aggressively. We are engaging in particular, you will recall members, that the accountants, about 6-7 years ago, the accountants was in desperate state as well. We never had black accountants.
And to date, we can report that you almost have about 50% females neck on neck with males, black females in particular, and black accountants are actually superseding the white accountants. And of course, given that model, we were very clear that obviously that model is working and is working well in a lot of cases. We are working with them very closely, and we are really copying and taking certain things that are already working. So we are working on that model, and we are pushing aggressively. However, you will recall that it's obviously not a quick model. It takes a bit of time, but we are starting, and we are driving it aggressively and also working and putting all of those elements together. So we are driving it, and we are very cognizant of the matter and very concerned in particular. And in this particular case, we will be working directly with the president of the professional council, because in a lot of cases, we get a lot of comfort from the registrars, but it's at the back, the people that are not necessary that we see and talk to on a regular basis where the commitment is coming from. But that engagement has been actually written. We've actually gone back to the professional council that we've asked that they must write targets for themselves. This year, how many blacks are you going to try and achieve? Next year, what are you going to achieve? Females and so on. So it's no more just do what you can, but it's a matter of what are you going to achieve, why you haven't achieved it, and what strategies you want us to support in order to us to achieve that. So we are aggressively working on that model, and we will continue to push on a regular basis. So it is in the forefront of our commitment, and we are really putting it as a priority also as a council. Thank you.
Thank you, CBE. CBE, you're not pushing enough. Let's walk the talk. We've been raising these issues with you, and nothing is happening. Can you make sure, Chairperson, and not disappoint us, to make sure that you move with speed? Department.
Honorable Chairperson, honorable members and colleagues, I will not be long. I must actually just from the outset state that the new minister has indicated that he will be making himself available to be briefed on urgent business. And we have been briefing the minister to date. He's been having meetings ever since he started. One of the things that I'm going to expedite would be to ensure that the minister is briefed on all outstanding legislation that has been raised in this meeting. And I must be frank, Chairperson, yes, we are guilty as charged. I accept it. There have been failures and gaps in the department. We're working very hard to improve that. And this I am saying in response to submissions that are alleged to have been submitted to the department, and also with regard to the built environment in Daba, and also the CBE Act. One of the last items that I'd like to address is the 9,000 professionals that the former minister reported to Parliament that they've actually indicated a keen interest to be involved in our business. Chairperson, here, just to indicate one dynamic, at one point, out of the 9,000 professionals, we took about 20 that we wanted to assign work in the respective municipalities to try and assist municipalities to be able to break their projects into...
Can I stop him and say we'll need a proper briefing on this one? Agreed.
Thank you, Chairman. We'll provide a brief on this one.
Thank you. CIDB. Question from CIDB, honourable members. Honourable one.
I don't know if it's out now that you have called that. Actually, I wanted also to raise the issue of our public entities for the students. Eskom, Telkom, Transnet, I... Okay. Okay.
CIDB, honourable members. Honourable Gaila?
No.
Are you covered with CIDB? I'm from Junior. CIDB, ne?
Yeah, CIDB.
Yeah, the next. No, I want to change the GM, and I can't always start with
that.
CIDB, honourable members, honourable Magdala, honourable Sitole, this time it'll be the last one. And then honourable Sitole, after you, honourable Magdopa.
Okay, Chairperson, my concern is on page 4 on the achievements, page 4 and page 5. Yeah. Here, they have listed their achievements, number of targets achieved. They are saying they are 7. But when they are listing that down, they don't list 7. In fact, they list 3 on top of the program expenditure outcome, also down there on page 4. They didn't list 5. Also on page 5. they didn't list six instead of they listed two. So I would like to know what is the problem? Why are they not listing all the targets achieved? Thank you.
Thank you. Barbara Stolle.
Thank you, Chairperson. On the same page, where they talk about the communication section with industry stakeholders and state of industry, covering customer satisfaction, quality, payment, delays, business, connect state of transformation, etc. They say they were on ACOS in Cape Town and East London and KZN. I want to find out about other provinces. What engagement do they have with other provinces? And then another one here on page 6. On the last bullet and under achievement, the fraud and awareness workshop was held over 2 days. For what I want to find out, the cases that they have been charged and what are the outcomes on that one? Thank you.
Honourable, are you done? Honourable Madopa? Honourable Madopa? Honourable Gayla?
Yeah,
Honorable Nguyen.
No, it's a small addition, Chair. On the results, we're told that Mr. Naidu did go to the Eastern Cape. Maybe if they can send even a brief as to what happened, what transpired in that meeting. Because we were once there, and then a lot happened. And then on page 4, again, construction day, okay. It is just a point I wrote down about CIDB visiting the provincial or the regional authorities. Because what they report here is not exactly what is happening at regional level. What's that? About the achievement. I think that's all.
Are we done with CIDB, honourable members?
Sorry. Lastly, Chair. On page 6, the fraud and awareness workshop was held over to, and then they're saying they hold that annually. Maybe because of the problems that they are encountering, maybe if you can hold those workshops twice a year instead of once a year. So if somebody has missed that workshop, it shows that we'll attend after 2 years.
Honorable Makubanu will be followed by Honorable Wanyamabila.
Thank you, Chairperson. On page 4, payment delays. I wonder what is the cause of the delay, because if you are running a business, you know that at the end of the month you are supposed to pay the workers. And now there are payment delays. What is the cause of that? I think there is something wrong there. Another issue, when you go to vacancies, I don't know whether they use the term the Zulus are using. Ukuthingena uvala umnyango ungabisangena umuntu. So I say this because, I mean, there is a rumor that says that whoever receives the applications and look at them, once he or she sees that, hey, this person is really educated, if at all he is employed here, I'm finished. I'm going to lose my job, he's going to take over. So I must see to it that I throw his application, the rubbish bin, and forget about it. So those things must be looked at and be, tried to be solved.
Honorable Wanyamawila. Chairperson, I think also one of the challenge with the CIDB is the issue of transformation that you are talking about each and every day, the issue of the grading.
Can you raise your voice, ma'am?
I'm saying, Chair, with CIDP, I think the issue of transformation is one of the major challenges, especially the grading.
of this of the contractors. Maybe if we can just be brief that within this two quarters, is there any progress, whether one or two BEs that have been upgraded from the level where they were to another level, because we are here for that. We need to ensure that the industry is being transformed. Then secondly, I was just checking at this summary. Can you just brief us about the recruitment? We know that this is the year for job creation, but can we just get a picture of how many people were recruited in the first and the second quarter? Then the last one is that they're talking of this fraud and awareness workshop. There are allegations that there's a lot of fraud and corruption in the industry. Within the first and the second quarter, there were any employees that has been disciplined? If yes, how many? And what were the causes of those? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Gayla.
Yes, Chairperson. Page 5, that the second slide on compliance report was gazetted and published in July 2011. Investigation into non-compliance to CIDP prescript by public sector clients. You said 97 out of 100 did not comply. Good. Now, if you remember, Chairperson, when the department was presenting, they were blaming CIDP, the CFO. They said that your systems do not talk to their systems. So what is the truth of the matter there? Because the department was blaming you for the non-compliance. Then lastly, your legislation, you said there's a legislation that you've sent to the department. Have you had any feedback from that? Thank you.
Thank you. CIDP, can you please respond?
Yes, thank you, Chair. Thank you, Honorable Member, for the question. I will start off by responding to some of the questions here, and my colleagues will also respond to the rest of them. And the first one I want to talk to is the, or respond to, is with regards to board members accompanying us. I think it was a bit of an oversight on our side, and we will ensure that in future we are accompanied or that they accompany us to these meetings. That it's not necessarily the chairperson who has to be there all the time. With regards to the targets listed, the achievements, that they don't reconcile to what we actually listing down there. I think at the beginning of my presentation, I also indicated that we bring out the highlights, we show the highlights, you know, the key issues that we feel the committee should be appraised on. It's more, you know, the topical issues that we wanted to discuss with the committee. In our next presentation for the next quarter, or even still, we can respond by drafting a written response to the committee. We can list all the elements, you know, of the achievements that are there. Fraud and awareness. On the type of cases that are involved, Mr. Biran will actually be responding to that. The other matter I wanted to talk to, I think at this point, let me just hand over to my colleagues to respond to the other issues, and then I'll wrap up at the end. Thanks. We'll start with Mr. Naidu.
Thanks, Chair. I think some of the questions were related to the provincial outreach of CIDB, and there were certain provinces mentioned in terms of the construction indicators and the SME surveys, and they were focused on something like 4 as achievements. However, and rightly so, the CEO also mentioned that there were specific outreach efforts from various programs, And under growth and contracted development, we run contracted development forums in each province where we invite various associations and client departments to interact with the CIDB. And this has been accomplished in the last quarter. In every province, a meeting has been held. What was spoken to in terms of the indicators, in those four provinces, there were specific workshop events in the last quarter that were held, but this is not a deliverable that must happen in every quarter. So in the next quarter, perhaps the next four, and in the last quarter, maybe the remaining one. So there is a phased approach of dealing with those type of indicators. But the contract development forum meetings happen per quarter in every province. Some feedback from my interaction specifically in the Eastern Cape, but it's not confined only to that province. Over the last 2 months, both our enterprise development manager, Mr. German and Pashlela, and myself have traveled the length and breadth of the country to every province to meet, especially with the associations, and more especially the black associations, the likes of starting from the professionals, the SAPTACOs, through to NAFCON, NAFCOC, ABBA, BBCBE, and NAFBI. These are just some of the associations that we've interacted with in all of the provinces, specifically the response to the question on the Eastern Cape. I personally, together with Mr. Pashlela, traveled to Amtata, Port Elizabeth, and East London to meet with the associations. The initial response to our interactions was a bit aggressive in terms of not having addressed some of the issues and concerns. They tabled the letters that were provided to yourselves and other letters that were sent to address to the presidency, etc. And the outcome of those meetings were that an MOA is now in final draft stages where they are willing to interact and, as first recourse, interact and debate and discuss issues with CIDB. So we've managed to taper down some of those concerns and those issues. They have written a subsequent letter, which they've provided to the CIDB as well, to both the Parliamentary Portfolio Committee as well as the Presidency, to say the issues are now in discussion with CIDB. So we seem to be making progress in terms of alleviating some of those concerns. So on a lighter note, I think it's safer territory for the PBC to visit again. And if there's any issues, please raise it with us. But we've committed ourselves in your future visits as CIDB to have our provincial rep and a head office rep to accompany you and to address some of the concerns or questions in future visits. I think my colleague, Mr. Mullah, might also discuss, because he deals with some of the stats from the registration processes, but maybe from my perspective of growth and contract development on the issue of transformation. One way of measuring transformation is to, yes, look at the stats and analyze to see what's the number of black-owned enterprises that have now progressed up the grades, and that's then vertical growth. Other ways of measuring is also horizontal growth in terms of sustainability. We have seen a growth in especially black ownership. The levels up to now, grade 6, is in the region of about plus 70% black ownership. And that's, as I said, just one means of measurement of growth and sustainability. We acknowledge, however, by no means at the higher grade, 7, 8, and 9, is the length and breadth and depth of transformation at the levels we'd like to see. And there have been upgrades, and there are now in excess of 10 or 15 black-owned grade 9 enterprises that are truly owned and managed and controlled and not merely fronting exercises. But in the last quarter, yes, there are, have been upgrades. The detail of those will probably come from Seth, and we can give you that at a later stage as well. I think I'll also just touch very briefly on fraud and corruption in general, especially from the side of employees, because my program oversees the management of our provincial CIDB offices, which are partnered with Public Works, and we call these construction contact centers. And these are the front line or face of CIDB where the registration happens, and the potential for fraud might be the largest in terms of face-to-face interaction or some type of irregular activities. I think because of our outreach campaign in terms of fraud awareness creation, and as well as taking very strong punitive action against previous employees through suspensions, taking it through to various disciplinary processes, etc., the message is loud and clear in the organization. We go through these regular awareness campaigns with the staff, and we've seen a turnaround in terms of lower numbers of transgressions or irregularities. We still have a fraud reporting hotline, anonymous, or you can provide details. And if that is brought to our attention, we go through a forensic auditing and other audit process to investigate those individual staff members, etc. But in the last quarter, from the triple C's, our frontline, we haven't had any reports of transgressions, and we haven't been able to internally pick any of those up. Not to say it might not be happening, but awareness in this regard is perhaps reaching the intended target audience. Chair, I think that's most of my input.
Thank you, Mr. Gerard. Just to continue here, on the issue of the recruitment levels and plans and all that, I must indicate that we even since our last interaction with the committee, we have, and the board has requested this as well, we have actually put into place a plan to now start recruiting disabled people into some of the vacant positions, and I think the next three available positions, we've actually earmarked them for that. The fraud awareness training, that happens biannually. There's a dedicated one to the registered staff, and there's also a company-wide one to all the staff members. So basically we're doing three of them in a year on fraud and awareness. With that, I'll also just now allow Mr. Muller to continue with the rest of the questions as well.
Thank you very much, Chair and honorable members. I'm just going to pick up some of the questions that weren't picked up and those that are relevant. The question, first of all, was what transpired in the Eastern Cape meetings. And recently we did, I think it was 2 weeks ago, where we went down to the Eastern Cape and we met with contractors who were seriously concerned about the school tenders that were out there. And unfortunately, as you know, the way that the tenders are put out wasn't lending itself towards exposure to work opportunities for contractors. The reason why CIDB is involved is because we run a national registration system, CIDB is often seen to be the barrier there. But sometimes we have to acknowledge that the way the projects are packaged, one has to acknowledge if enough opportunities are given to contractors at those levels. So we did meet the contractors, and by and large, it was regarding the schools project, and that was put out by the DBSA. Contractors did raise with us after the meeting, well, as addition to the meeting, is that the issue of grading is a challenge. And we shared with contractors the work in progress the CADB has with the department in terms of the regulation amendment. And the issue of the moratorium that was sent to the Department of Public Works. We are working with the department in terms of both those submissions. It was actually the question relates to the other one on, I think the member asked about the legislation that was sent to the department. So yes, to pick up that answer as well, to Mr. Gaila as well, that the legislation regarding that issue was sent to the department. We are working with the department. Two submissions. The one is the issue of downgrading. The other one is the actual regulation amendment. So we're working together on those. But the outcome of the Eastern Cape meeting is the CIDB undertook to at least look at what was the thinking behind, what was the strategy behind the tender that went out. And so we've undertaken to do that, and when we will indeed do that. That's the DBSA, the DBSA tender. Okay, then in terms of the issue of the statistics, CIDB does produce quarterly report in the calendar quarter, so March and so forth. We can make that available together with other statistics to the members as well. Regarding the fraud and awareness workshop, my colleague will talk about that. But within the, if you look at the reporting on page 5, it says achievement, the fraud workshop was held over 2 days. But within the registers program, if you look at the actual before the strategic objectives and our targets, we do two workshops a year. So in the registers, we have two workshops annually. And then our risk committee has found that those workshops, we should have two workshops for the CIDB as a whole, not just registration staff, but broader as well. So we take that point. I think, thank you. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Are you done?
Good afternoon, Chair and honourable members. I'm responding on the issues of non-compliance to the CIDB prescripts. I think what is important is that in these audit lists that we're currently carrying out on the public sector bodies, we are looking for compliance, but at the same time we conduct training on compliance with the CIDB prescript. So we can do a comparison to say, if we have gone down and claimed certain organizations, why then are we still sitting with non-compliance to the CIDB prescript? Now, on the issue of the audit list, a sample of 97 clients was taken. We picked up 100% non-compliance, as we had given you indication earlier. We wrote to these departments and we said to them, this non-compliance is specifically to the Register of Projects. Now, the Register of Projects demands of the CIDB in terms of our act that we publish the nature, the value, where projects are, who has been awarded these projects, the contract amount of these projects. That's supposed to be up on our website. And by virtue of the fact that these clients are not complying to that particular legislation, we are not going to be fining them. I am not too certain on what the CFO of DPW has reported, but I think we'll take that up with our colleagues to look at what specific aspect of non-compliance was raised or the fact that our legislation is a hindrance, but I think we will do that in a separate meeting with DPW and take that forward. But just a caution to our sister organizations that are here, DPW and IDT, you will not be outside the realm of the audit list. If you are non-compliant with the Register of Projects, you will have to keep 100,000 aside for the fine that we will be issued. On the issue of the Gazette, the CIDB regulations require that if we find anybody guilty, a contractor or a public sector department, we have to gazette that because it's an income to the CIDB. And for public sector departments, they will have to declare that in their financial statement. So I have a requirement to report that to the Auditor General. That's why it's gazetted for public notification. The last one in July, we looked at 15 contractors that were cited for non-compliance to the CIDB regulations and 9 public sector bodies. This is outside of the audit blitz, which is focused on the Register of Projects. The 9 public sector bodies was probably issues regarding non-compliance to the standard for uniformity, awarding a contract to a non-graded CIDB contractor, and those sorts of issues. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Did we need to, if you don't mind?
Yes, sir.
You don't mind? IDT, Mama. Honorable members, questions to the IDT. Honorable Steinhausen, followed by Honorable Sithole, Honorable Ngonyamavila, Honorable Mnguni, Honorable November, Honorable Gayla, Honorable Madlopa, Honorable Nguan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I'm referring to page 29 on the document that was handed out by IDT. I just want to just get some clarity on item 2.3.2.4, and that's the partnership with PWMSA. I want to establish what the nature of the partnership. Is it a financial partnership, or is it an assistance with infrastructure and the like? If it is a financial partnership, is there an amount that you'll be able to tell us was granted to PWMFSA? Thanks.
Honourable Tolle.
My problem saying is no case on this one, but I might have a quick 21.
Mic on, Baba.
I marked it on page 21. Okay, on that page they're talking about that they achieved toilet, they completed toilet. $4,959. But my problem, Chair, here is the workmanship on this toilet. I was at Nganda. It was in Natal. In 08.
Can you raise your mic?
Oh, so sorry, Chair. The thing is working.
It's not wrong.
Okay. They say they completed 4,959 toilets. But my problem is the workmanship that they did. Because I was at Kwazulu Natal, at Ward 8. Their toilets are are terrible. Your toilet has been done by IGT. You cannot even sit. If you are sitting in the toilet, you have to open the door of the toilet. I'm telling you, there's a terrible in what
are they small?
They are very small. They are very small. They are very small. And what I want to find out, why don't they work with the CSIR? Because they have different model of toilets. Because they are using the same toilet, even in what one at Ngutu, they are using the same model of toilet. So now, I don't know why. And that other one, I think, no, I will come back here. Thank you.
Honorable Wanyan Mavila.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Chairperson, when looking at the spending trend of the department to date, it's at 98.0%. What I want to check is that are they not foreseeing any over expenditure? If we've got the same view, how are they going to deal about that situation? Then when looking at the employment cost again, the presenter said they've said, what do we call it? There was a saving under the employment cost. What I wanted to check is that was it a saving or maybe an underspending? Because normally, you know, if people underspend, they call it a saving. So I want to just check really, was it a saving or the underspending? So again, on the administrative expenses, when looking at the expenditure to date is at 97.0%. What is the view of the IGT? Are they not also foreseeing any over expenditure under this program? The last one, Chair, is on the issue of the exchange program that they've talked about when looking at the pictures, this page. The students that were sent to China, was it part of the learnership or internship? How did they recruit those students, and also for how long are they going to be there? Then the other one is the issue of the when looking at the page, documenting a page, in a page, empowerment of the communities, whereby they are saying that the proposed corrective actions will include acceleration of let me leave that one, Chair. The last one, I think we need to commend EIDT, Chair, on this EPWP, because out of the places that we have visited, really, we've seen that there's an improvement. You know, I don't know whether those that accompanied us were provincial managers from IDT. Really, they know their stories. They know what is it that they are doing, especially in Northern Cape and... Northern Cape. Yeah, I think we need to commend them because we're not... And what?
No.
I was not there, so that is why I'm not talking about Eastern Cape. But I want to say, Chair, that we need to commend them for the good work that they are doing, because while on the other side, we're here to assist one another. Where they are doing good, we need to appreciate. If there are gaps again, we need to identify those gaps and try to assist them on how best can we improve the situation. But really, Chairperson, I think the Food for Waste program was one of the best that really changes the life of the poor people in fighting hunger and malnutrition. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Majapa. Honorable Mungoni. Honorable November.
Thank you. There's also another concern on the slide that says analysis of spend in relation to government priorities. The last part of it is other. Who is other?
Honorable Gayla? You left the last bite. Oh, Honorable Mazopa?
Thanks for the presentation also. I think really we need to commend IDP. You know, when we started, it was not like that. Really, they've drastically improved even on the reporting part. But I want to check, even in Eastern Cape, you know, the only project that we saw was the one that was done by IDP, not the Department of Public Works in the province. It was terrible. It was really terrible. But we really congratulate you. Keep up the good work. But I want to check, I think it's a concern around the issue of Northern Cape on the spend per province. Mid-year, there is no page. I want to check KZN have a deficit of 73 million. They have overspent. How does it impact on the budget, and where are they going to recover that amount that they have overspent? Because I can see here. Yeah, that is the question, Chair.
Thank you,
Chair. Chair, I think I need to echo what has been said by my colleague around IDT. I think really it is good that when the entity has done a good job, we need to commend. IDT is doing a sterling job. What we have done in the Northern Cape is really good. And also, like my colleague is saying, what the only project, sustainable project that we saw in the Eastern Cape were from IDT. Having said that, I just wanted to check something on my, it's on page 7. You said the increased demand coming from the departments, education, human settlement. I just wanted to check the planning with the various departments. Is it improving, or do you need to do something? Because before it was just sort of falling apart and giving IDT a lot of problems. Also on page 13, it's still about the food security in the Northern Cape. I just wanted to touch on it. Okay, on the alternative construction methods pilot. You said you are using the faster and cost-effective material, and you want to transfer skills and for the maintenance plan for this. How soon are you going? Can you do it? Because immediately you put up a structure, you need to have a plan for its maintenance. And also the building of these industries locally for the good of the maintenance. What are your plans regarding that? Or maybe we'll depend on the department. I think that's all, Chairperson. Otherwise, IDT is doing us proud. Thank you.
IDT? Oh, I thought you were not interested. Okay, Honorable Gayla, Sipa.
No, yes, I want to speak because it's in fact, I'm going to go over the other two entities. First of all, let me join my colleague in saying well done, IDT. Reasons, Chairperson. CIDB, the contractors is in Eastern Cape that are buyer greater to IDT. That is the truth of the matter. not a department, it's nobody, it's IDP. It is IDP. It's how they work with the stakeholders. Yeah. And I've got proof of that. What I would like to know from IDP, the alternative method is very good. But one would like you to see that you mixed it, Jefferson. Because there will be a lot of jobs that will be lost if you don't use a conventional method. And you'll also be losing out on those contractors that you've assisted. So one would like you to have a certain percentage on the alternative method and also on the conventional to create jobs and to upgrade the contractors. And then one would also like to know how many math schools are you being awarded this coming year? Because you, the department in Eastern Cape has been dumping math funds to you, and you've been having the blame of non-payment of contractors. Have they now decided to get rid of you after they've used you? Lastly, Chairperson, what we need here, Chairperson, Chairperson, through you, I would request CBB for the signing of those two professional councils that they must report to you within, whether it's 21 days, because we need to know if they haven't signed and what the department is going to do about it. It's very important. Now, we need air legislation. Yeah, we're sitting on a time bomb, Chairperson, of youth that are unemployed. And we have these professional bodies sitting here. For instance, CIDB, in line with the construction sector and the department, you need to come up with a legislation that intakes youth as apprentices in all the as artisan apprentices in all the skills that are short in this country, as well as department where you come in. Is that the work comes from you, and you can then come up with a legislation. If you want work from government, you have to do A, B, C. It has been done previously. There's nothing wrong with that. And then also CBE, the professional council, they cannot get away with murder. You need to come up with a legislation. If you give professional council, professional companies work, they have to take in terms of the various different technical professionals. And that also needs a legislation. We are not going to sit here. As I said, somebody gave me, which I'm going to give to you, that emblem. I don't deal with taxpayers. You deal with it. I'm going to give that to you. Drop the envelope in my house. That was a sign that we know you are there, you are a member of parliament. We are not getting any joy of dealing with the government or anybody else. So you then need to come up with this legislation. You need to sit down with these with entities, because we are sitting on a time bomb of youth that is unemployed. And one of these days, these youth are going to turn against us. And we are not here. We're not going to allow them to turn against us as a chairperson. And you are the one that's sitting with the purse of the government. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Gayla. All members, are we done? Should I allow IDT to respond? IDT, over to you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'll try and cluster them into different areas. Honorable members have picked up a problem with the sanitation. I'll be the first to admit this. The workmanship on some of those sanitations, remember I said it started in January. Now, some of them we've had to revisit because we had to start with social facilitation. Now, there's two pressures that you sit with as an implementing agent. One is the pressure of deliver and delivering now, and the other is of doing things correctly. And so those pressures, I think we've taken note of those. We have, in fact, a report which I'm willing to share with the members that actually highlights those particular issues and proposes interventions to deal with those issues. So I'll be the first to admit that. In that first batch, there were problems of workmanship which we are working through.
IDT, can we get a report?
Yes.
Of those toilets, because the same issue was raised in human settlement.
Yes.
There's
a problem that you need to unlock with the Department of Human Services. Can you also get that report?
Yes.
Because the Honourable Member raised this issue. It's from, he also sits in the Human Settlement Portfolio Committee. That's why he's raising this issue with you.
Yes, Chairperson. Indeed.
Chairperson, can we get it? Thank you, ma'am.
Indeed, you'll receive it, Chair, because we... No, you can even receive it within that. We have the report because we actually did that M&E exercise ourselves in anticipation of those problems, and we've put in place those particular solutions. The admin expenses under expenditure or under budgeting or savings. The truth of the matter is it's savings, because we put together a savings plan that talked about travel, talked about staffing and all that, and so that becomes a savings. Those projections are not to the year, but what we had already put in, what we had budgeted for the year, so that percentage is against that. So I would insist that it's still saving. PWMSA, that is, remember, on our three legs. One of the legs is institutional support. One of the greatest problems, and I think it was identified by three ministers ago, was the fact that women in the general industry do not have a voice. And the solution within that was to develop networks for women to have those voices. So amongst those networks is PWMSA, South African Women in Construction, and South African Women in Dialogue. So let's not look at it in isolation, but we're looking at supporting all of them. How do we support them? Through mentoring, through financing. So we've got a 1.5 allocation towards PWMSA. Through anything, running the workshops, strategy development, etc., whatever the needs would be within that sector. We identified the students who went to China. It's a short-term program. We stumbled on it, Chairperson, because if there's a revolutionary thing that must happen in rural South Africa, it's access to information, communication, and technology. That's the difference between the level of success a rural child will have versus my child who studies in urban areas. It's that access to technology. What we realize is that there are no skills in those rural areas to drive those technologies. And so we are beginning to identify with Huawei students that we can train in ICT with the purpose of them servicing the rural areas. So those 10 are the first batch. This year there will be 20. They're from various institutions, University of Johannesburg, University of Fort Hare, and so on. But there's a list of them. We work together with the deans of those faculties to identify the top students who will serve the rural areas, who are willing to work in rural areas. So not only are they good students in terms of A graders, but they've also got the heart, which is becoming quite rare amongst young people, and I speak as a young person. They've got the heart to actually do rural development, and that's why we've identified them. Northern Cape and KZN expenditure, indeed we're very worried. That's why we highlighted. We're worried on one part, on Northern Cape's under, and on the other part, KwaZulu-Natal's over in terms of allocation. When we do our midterm review with the board, we'll be looking at playing those across each other. The ACM maintenance plan, that is why when we talked about the ACM, we talked about the issue of social facilitation being critical. Because if you don't do the social facilitation, you will not be able to predict or maintain that particular level. So all those tough structures, because we went that route, the communities involved in the maintenance plan of those particular schools. Here lies the challenge, Honourable Members, the funding to continue that maintenance. Because we can train them to maintain the globe. We can train them to clean the classroom. But there will be funding required to do that in the long run. And so when we do our allocation for buildings, often we're not looking at the maintenance plan of that building. And so there's something that we need to be doing collectively. And we take responsibility as the public works family to do that. I don't want to go into the discussion around the math schools. Our allocation in terms of IDT was 150 million trays that were given by the board. We've delivered on those particular math schools. Now, the choice of what the Eastern Cape government chooses to do is an area that would, I'm sure you'd accept this, would be most uncomfortable for me to drive on. All I can say is we've done the work, we've delivered on the work that we're given. Some of the work was still being owed in terms of money that we should be paying. Thus, the contractors are being agitated. That's the long and short of it. The delivery model and my suggestion, not just on the math schools, you also raise the issue of job creation. My own proposal is that probably the institution that's running both, the Jobs Fund is with the Development Bank of Southern Africa. They're supposed to have a delivery model that's supposed to give us the kinds of jobs that we're looking for. Same thing with the math school program. The delivery of the math school program rests at the Development Bank of Southern Africa. If you relate those two programs,
Then it says there's cause for this committee to ask for that institution to account on those two elements. And I think we can take it from there, because I don't want to judge what that institution seeks to do with those two particular problems. Other than that, Chairperson, I'm sure I've been managed to clarify all of them.
IDT, in the last week's summit, as a portfolio committee, we made a recommendation that the bricks that are used on EPWP projects must not be bought, must be manufactured by those who are on EPWP projects. So in the Northern Cape, we saw very good bricks that are SABS compliance, to say by making our own bricks, we'll be creating a lot of jobs. Can we agree in this meeting that you go and look into it and make sure that we no longer buy bricks? We... CIDB, what's wrong? we make our own bricks.
Chairperson, I can agree with that, but I think the real recipient of the message is the department, because the large part of infrastructure delivery lies with the department. We are mere coordinators of one sector. We can do that within that sector, but I think the gear shift that you're looking for is really, really sitting with the department.
Yeah, also listening, both of you. I'm addressing both of you. Honorable Majopa?
No, thanks, Chair. No, we appreciate the responses. But, Chair, I'm having a concern. You know, if we are saying we are recruiting from the metro universities to take them to the rural areas to assist people in the rural areas, I will suggest that maybe we look at the rural universities and then we recruit the students from there, not to say that you start from the cities, because those people that are in the deep rural areas, really, it will be expensive even for you to transport those people to the deep rural areas. I suggest that you better recruit from the rural university. Eastern Cape, University of Zululand, all those people, Chair.
Honorable Wanyamabila.
Chair, I just want to talk about what Member Majopa has indicated, that I was also having a different view on what was presented, because there are many students that are roaming around with IT diplomas or whatever in the rural areas. You know the challenge that we're experiencing now in rural areas with regard to the shortage of staff in our clinics and hospitals is that issue of people coming from urban areas who are saying that you are willing to serve there. After 2 years, due to the condition, you know, of rural areas, they want to go back to urban areas. So if we really want to address the challenge of improving the rural skills, let us focus on the rural learners, not identifying the urban students to go and work in rural. Because ngeke bakumele ukuthi thina sisase nama pit toilet. Angeke bakumele ukuthi we stay maybe for sometimes 2 days, we're still drinking salty water, you know. They are used to those situations. So if they can recruit in rural areas, those students with IT certificates, because there are lots of them, you know. But are still certificates and diplomas. I think also it would be good for them to work with rural development, because they've got this comprehensive rural development program, whereby they are building, you know, internet cafes in rural areas, so that when they're doing this household profiling, they can identify students with their IT skills or diplomas, so that you recruit amongst those to go away and be trained and come back and work in those centers. Because we're talking of integrated service delivery. So we need to come together and do one thing and make a change. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Wanyamabila. Do you still have something to say?
Just a quick one, Chairperson. I think conceptually would agree with that. One of the universities, or two of them, University of Limpopo, University of Venda, we're already working with those universities. We are going to work with a further number of universities. So conceptually, we are fine. Some of the schools we're going to be, because the strategy is two pronged.
One is to deal with the immediate needs in rural South African ICT. And that's not a long-term thing, it's a short-term. So over the short-term, as we build ICT hubs in Mweshe, who's going to go have the right skills to do that? And it is the top students, unfortunately, at the moment. So there's a short-term that's going to deal with that. And the long-term is actually to put ICT hubs in almost every school that the IDT or any other institution goes together for education. So that over the long run, we can have the skills resident in those areas. So it's a two-pronged strategy. It's not a one-off. The CRDP is a program that we also coordinate on behalf of rural development. So the EREP centers that you refer to, Honorable Member, they're part of the work that the IDT does in any case. So we are working together with CRDP to actually deliver on this.
Thank you. Honorable Member, we're still in the meeting. Honorable Members, we have come to the end of our meeting. Can I allow my whip to say something in this meeting?
Thank you, Honorable Chair. IDT, CBE, CIDB, and AGRIMA, South Africa, if it's there, they're still here, would like to, on behalf of the Portfolio Committee, would like to thank you so much for coming, and thank you so much for the presentation, and thank you so much for showing us the progress on what you are doing. We are really pleased so far. We've said that we need to say good things when things are good, and then we'll shout at you if things are bad. There we can promise you that. Thank you very much. I think the standard you are setting, you are showing the department that you can do it. No, really, because most of the things stop with the department. We really appreciate what we have done. Thank you so much. Thanks, sir.
Thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned. Thank you.